Recorded live.
This is William Fink, and it's January 18th, and this is the Krista Genia Fellowship call. Hello, everybody. Hello, Patricia.
Hello.
Hello, Winky.
Hey, I'm gonna be a pest and go first here because my cell phone battery is hosed and not gonna last. But I just wanted to, I sent this out to a couple people that Amish families are exempt from the insurance mandate, and it was from a story in the Times Washington Correspondent on Saturday that the federal health care reform will require most New Yorkers, but not all, it turns out, to carry health insurance or risk a fine. But hundreds of Amish families in the region are likely to be free from that requirement, and it's because of their religious objections to insurance. So, man, this may work for us. It would be great. So,
yeah,
hey, just tell them, what part of no don't you understand? Exactly. When did somebody make you my master anyways?
Exactly. It's exactly true.
Bill, I've gone up against Catholic Healthcare West Beast. They have no idea. They just have to come to the realization we don't walk in fear.
Right.
That's false evidence appearing real. It's an illusion. It's the Wizard of Oz. Right?
The whole healthcare, the insurance industry is basically a Jew scam.
Of course it is. I worked in the hospital industry for 21 years. I saw murder at the hands of doctors and nurses and was bold enough to report it. And I tell you, what is it, Isaiah 59:17, when you're going into, I was on the treadmill every day, okay, no weapon formed against me shall prosper, and every lying tongue that comes out of that den of wolves. I mean, I was just, had to pray myself strong before I went into work with the beast and the wolves. There's this pretty terrible situation what happens. I really encourage everyone to keep their health. I'm a clinical dietitian, and hopefully I can be a blessing to the family, but I can tell you what, they don't focus on prevention. I've, tried to, I've been in this for 30, years, the nutrition and medical industry, and it really is a big sham. It's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment that we have that in this country.
Well, that's because the, well, doctors get 90% of their post-medical school continuing education, right, from the pharmaceutical companies.
Oh, exactly. And one thing I encourage everyone, too, if they've ever seen, I don't really trust Dr. Len Hurlwitz. I know he was a member of the Knights of Malta, and I believe he's a Jew. But he did do a documentary on In Lies We Trust. It's funny how they expose themselves. So you think they're not the problem. You guys, I've called Alex Jones' show. I just had a witness. Now, mind you, everything that I'm sharing with you that I do, it's not flesh. I have to be a definite. I've heard from him, and then it's a confirmation. So, but I did, call him, and I said, I don't know how long you think, those of us, because I just had heard what was going on, and, that we're not all, you talk down to us like we're idiots, and, the gig's up. We know who you are and what you're doing, and I'm calling you out as a fraud, and I'm saying and decreeing and declaring and doing what the prophets need to do. I says, one of these days you're going to be on air. And you're going to start to babble, and you won't be able to control yourself, and you're going to be made a laughing stock openly. And you know what else he did in the old covenant? He made them, the false ones, crawl down on their belly. I said, you'll be doing that too. So let me just give you fair warning. We're not having any fear in this family that's come to fight you, and just know that. And that's what I'm doing. I'm contacting pastors, local officials. I'm not stopping. This is
I'd be surprised if you got anybody in the mainstream to listen. I mean, they don't think there's a problem.
That's not even the point, Bill. The point is that I fulfilled my obligation to give the John the Baptist, repent, repent, for the kingdom of Yahweh is at hand. And they will be without excuse. But I'm asking every one of you, we've been given authority to send derision into the enemy's camp, to send confusion and to curse the very root. And we can actually accelerate the process by using our mouth in order to cause death to them and then life to be spoken in to the family for strength and for adequate supplies and all of those kinds of things. I just wanted to kind of put that out there as an encouragement.
Yeah, well, there's something to be said for reproaching evil. I mean, that's definitely a duty. But, yeah, most people in the mainstream, you need a I'm going to ask you, what was your awakening? Because you seem to be very emotionally advanced in this, let me put it that way, in a very short period of time. What was your awakening?
Bill, you are very in tune. I'll tell you a little bit. My born-again experience, I was born in 58, and I had a complete conversion 85, how Yahweh twisted the numbers. You know how he has some of it, you know how you look at your own little walk. So it's been a while since I actually had accepted him into my life and my heart, but I just knew that there was, you know, when you're little and even before you accept him, you know that you were like you existed before. You just have that in you as just clouds, and just a lot of things were transpiring. And so anyways, I really got woke up to the whole corruption as far as the beast system working with the medical profession and in trying to get alternative and complementary and prevention put in instead of just the Band-Aid drug and surgery options, and fought with the doctors in the system. So I wasn't really aware of the whole Jew, New World Order banking system, except my parents were very good at teaching me. And I believe that they were. They didn't live for him, unfortunately. I probably won't see them again, but they taught me as a true Israelite stewardship, discipline, chores. I mean, my mom was so strict, kids would not walk down the front of on our sidewalk. Okay, we're talking real strict Southern Baptist kind of strict raising. So grew up with a lot of discipline and stewardship, and, you know, they were smart in that they would work five jobs and just, you know, buy something and then say pay it off as quick as possible and get out from underneath the banking system. So I think with President Eisenhower's speech and all, they were aware of the banker's hold, and they bought, and then they would seek to obtain and pay it off as quickly as possible. So I had all of that as a background, which was really neat, but I didn't understand about the, I think it was during the election, it was about a couple of years that I've been woke up to this whole thing, and I'm a pretty quick study. I'll study 100 hours a week and do 20 hours a day just to catch up if I have to, because I don't like being ignorant. Paul said he wished that we weren't ignorant, brethren, so... that was it, and I just dive in from 5 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock at night if I have to catch up with the information I need to know. And I'm not really a fast learner, honestly. It's just that I'm a persistent, diligent, presenting myself, you know, that pressing towards the mark, just loving the word like that and loving that knowledge and in all my get understanding, loving Proverbs. Loving the word of God, that living by every word, it's just you have a hunger. And this has been all my life. I know that I've been peculiar. I would even act like I was, you know, I would say this all the time in prayer and wrestling, you know, because I've been called in that arena of being a prayer warrior. And I would say, I'm not letting go of you till you bless me, you know, praying. And so I was already doing it. And then I came to the realization of it, and my pastor was teaching us that we were spiritual. I wasn't in the regular denominational. I was in non-denominational. He was still 501(c), and I had a lot of conversations with him the past week trying to share this information, although he's not real open. So
Does he have the attitude that he knows the scripture and he knows everything? Or
oh, no, he doesn't. And I told – no, he's not. He's just – I don't know if people are just really – I sent them tons of emails. I mean, I will do all that you have – you know, how we were instructed. You email, you fax, you write letters. You know, you do whatever you can to wake people up so that I have that Ezekiel 33 watchman's call, you know, that there'll be no blood on my hands. And so I've not really gotten a response from him that seemed like he gets it. I've heard I heard Dr. Bill Deagle today. I've rebuked him too. Oh, I've rebuked Dr. Bill Deagle. You don't believe the people. I have no fear of man. I'll get in front of Barack Obama and say, let my people go. That's the boldness. You got everything taken away from you. You've lost everything. You got nothing left to lose.
Well, you're letting more luck with that on Wall Street.
What's that?
You might have more luck with that on Wall Street.
So,
I've noticed that I've had much higher success rates with people that are disaffected with the system. And you rarely find mainstream evangelical Christians or Baptist Christians disaffected with the system. Usually they have that inner peace that comes from total ignorance. I don't know how to quantify it. It's that they're happy with themselves, and I guess I don't want to sound really cruel, but pigs are happy in sties. You know,
hey,
that's the way it is.
I've told them all along, I mince no words, Bill, because I'll be justified my words and condemned by them. I said, you know what? I said, y'all are getting fat and sloppy. And I said, you know, it's really, really sad that, you know, he said that you would be have the spiritual rebirth, but that you're to live by every word. And so I don't know how you can do away with the law. I don't know how you can understand that you're to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. And they look at me like I'm some fanatical. They've called me a legalist. I said, how can you do away with the law and then receive the one that came to fulfill it? I don't think you can have it both ways, folks. And if you've got a double mind and a double heart and a forked tongue, you won't stand in the days that are to come unless you give your whole heart and your whole life. He said, seek first the kingdom. And if you've had everything taken away from you, maybe you've been doing the seeking of the stuff instead of the seeking of the giver.
So how did you find identity? That's what I'm curious about.
Oh, gosh, RBN. I was doing, you know, I decided at the end of last year, I was listening to Rick Adams. And he had Joe Church, and then there was Pastor Eli James. And I listened, I don't have any family or anything. They're all dead, and my brother's, you know, dead spiritually. So I don't have any, so I just said, you know, I'm just going to do like a, marathon during the holidays here by myself, and it was just like so cool. It was such a blessing. So I was listening to all of these archives on RBN, and I found Pastor Eli James and clicked on the link, and in 3 weeks I got a really good grip of what's going on as far as, you know, all of this identity. And I've been asked that before, Bill. I've been asked because I think people can look at me and they see, I guess, and maybe they know, you know, as colored, they go, are you racist? And I go, well, because I didn't know any of this, and so I would always answer no, you know, because I guess of the way that I talked and being so strict that they figured that I was, because I was such a person that believed in the commandments, and, you know, they just, that you can tell somebody out of your abundance of your heart, your mouth speaks. So it was just, I mean, it was just been 3 weeks ago now, because today's the 18th, and it was amazing. And then I just went to this website and clicked, and then I blamed the pastors, and boom, 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 and I was doing email campaigns, and I'm still going and listening to your shows and Pastor Visser and Eli and James Wickstrom. And I think I'm going to be – I want to help out with that wood chipper thing, though.
I'd miss the wood chipper thing. I'm sorry.
I listened to a show January 3rd, and I tell you what, I'd come out of such a season of mourning, and I was laughing so hard that my tummy felt like I'd been doing a marathon of sit-ups for a couple of days. That James – I told him, I think I elect you as being, you know, the number one where we can have the, where we have the big gatherings of the outpouring and bursting with overflowing joy, you know, sessions. I says, I'm gonna nominate you to be up there with your wood chipper dissertation and get us all cracking up.
Okay, I mean, I missed the whole wood chipper dissertation. I have ignorance of it. I'm sorry. I'm just.
Oh, go to James Wickstrom's show January 3rd of this year, and. It's at the first 15 minutes, because you know what's so funny? I've listened to it three times over and still laugh every time. It's that good. He's
That's
just got
funny.
That natural delivery. So, does that answer your question?
It must be a Michigan thing, because I was in prison with a guy from Michigan that had a thing, affinity for wood chippers, and always talked about wood chippers in connection with his first wife. I'm just telling the truth. It's not a Michigan thing. What can I say?
Hey, the other thing I did want to mention that was really important to me is I found, and that I've kind of been out in the wilderness, and I've shared this with a few of you here, so you know, and I'm very transparent. I I'm just going to be me. It's too much effort to try and be something and think that, you know, it's going to make everybody, I just be who I am. So please understand that I was searching for so long, for 20 years, you know, 25 years I've been saved, you know, of seeking and going into churches and being treated, you know, like I was not part of the family because I loved the law and was so fanatical, that when we get new people in the group and they've been beat up big time, okay? I mean, hung up on the phone, emails not answered, doors not answered, doors shut in your face. Now, I don't know if any of y'all have ever been through any of that, but I'm pretty persistent and I won't give up until it's the last and he says, don't go again. So I think when we have new people coming in, it's really important because pastors would not keep their word to me. They would not call back. They would not do this. And I think that really leaves a bad taste because I tell you what, people, we need to be people of our word, because if it can't be honored down here and we're going to be casting out and doing this, if we have any kind of a forked tongue or we don't have any kind of serious commitment to stick to that word, and if I call you, tell you I'm calling you at noontime and I haven't heard from you by 12:30, I'm getting concerned that we have a problem here, and that if I make a commitment that the integrity and the character is that you can count on me to back that word up 100% unless there's some emergency. You know what I'm saying? You build trust that way. And you establish character integrity, too, because it's not enough just to have logos. You have to really have the right.
Of course not. I mean, we have to have integrity with each other. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and I have found that already disappointing in just 3 weeks. And so I mention that without mentioning names. That's not necessary, but I just really think that we have new people coming in. Maybe we might want to think about that, and that trust is oftentimes established very quickly or lost very quickly. You know, it's, I only have one opportunity to make a first impression. And you know what also? My teacher used to complain that I would never open my mouth. I guess Yahweh had another plan. Now I talk too much. Oh, I'm done. Thank you for letting me share. I appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, we're just curious. I'm happy you shared that with us. What else is going on? Wow, don't everybody talk at once. I want to beg Linda to come back. Well, this is, you know, I run my mouth all day Friday with EY and Saturday with EY and Sunday with Brian, and this is feedback and fellowship time, you know. That's the way I look at it. Yeah, you guys got to make this program. I don't make this program.
Well, you know, it is important because he said we'd be justified or condemned, you know, and they think that's splitting hairs, and I go, well, if we think Yahweh's word is that important, why don't we take ours? And how do you think Yahweh would feel if I said, well, I'll call you after class? And there's no call. And you wait all day, and then it's the next day, and you didn't hear anything, and you didn't even get an email. Well, you think that's all right? I mean, am I just like being like way too... You think we should just make kind of cavalier shallow?
Well, no, we shouldn't make cavalier commitments and not follow up on them. That's true. But, you know, you have your professional pastors in the street that are associated with the church, and they're guaranteed an income. Yeah, you know what I mean? And they get a regular paycheck, and they sell their souls out for it. And most people associated with identity, I mean, like Eli, I know Eli's he's a small contractor, and he goes out and works his butt off every chance he could get, banging up sheetrock and stuff like that. And then he does this, and we don't make any money doing this. I mean, I have some people that have helped me out, but I mean, it's nothing I could ever think about living off. Do you know what I, and that's, So when we get the opportunity where we could to do some work, then the ministry has to suffer for it. That's the way it is. That's just the way it is. We have to be able to because this is all donated time. I mean, sure, there are people that help me out, but this is all time that I'm not trying to beat my own drum, believe me, but this is time that I volunteer away. I could be sitting on my butt reading a book or up watching, well, God forbid, watching television. Yeah, you know what I mean? So if somebody like Eli says, I'll call you, and he doesn't, I wouldn't hold it against him because he probably got a call for work. He has a whole lot of other people calling him. I mean, some days my phone just rings off the hook. It don't stop. And I'm not complaining by any means, but, you know, when we give so much of our time away and our own resources away, and then when it comes time to make some money and put a meal on the table, it has to be done. That's the way it is. It can't be avoided. So sometimes, all I'm trying to say is sometimes we make promises that we can't possibly keep. That's just the way it is. I mean, a Catholic priest, I probably would not be forgiving, because those bums collect a big paycheck and have everything provided for them, and they should give 110% of their time back to the community, and they don't. But yeah, you know, somebody like Eli or Clifton or whoever that gives away all his time and doesn't get a paycheck for it, when it comes time to squeeze 30 hours worth of stuff into 8 hours, it's hard to, something has to suffer for it. That's just the way it is. You know, I mean, there's absolutely no avoiding it. So that's all. When it's, in identity, it's all volunteer. That's what I'm saying. Nobody's giving us paychecks, and we all do what we can when we can. And okay. I would give those people a little more play than the Baptist preacher sitting on his butt in a nice house that the congregation paid for, and drawing a steady paycheck, whether or not he writes his own sermons, because none of them do. They go into a book of Spurgeon or one of those guys from the 1800s. They rip a sermon out and throw it on a copy machine, and they read that off on Sunday. There's a big difference.
I worked, a full-time job and then still donated time to the ministry and teaching nutrition all on my own time. So I understand, and, didn't get paid for that either. I really don't think that keeping our word should be based on whether, somebody's given to the ministry or anything.
What I'm saying is I might tell you, I try not to make commitments like that, but if I tell you I'll call you tomorrow and in the morning I get somebody calling me that wants a website developed and I get involved in that and my phone call with you slips into oblivion, what can I do? I got to put the meal on the table or pay the Jewish taxes. I understand.
You take 2 minutes and you say, we can't make the phone call today, Bill.
It's not always possible.
That's one thing that really bothers me, and I found in the church, is excuses. Money excuses or whatever. Listen, if I make an appointment with you tomorrow at 12 o'clock and at 10 o'clock there's an emergency, one of the first things on my list of to-dos as a steward, and whatever I've done to the least of them, I've done it to him, is that I call you and I tell you.
I
can't make the appointment at noon today. Can we
reschedule? All I'm trying to do is get you to give your brother a break. If the person does that to you repeatedly, then you have a choice of not dealing with that person anymore. And I wouldn't blame you for that. Do you understand?
I understand, but I don't agree. Because I have real strong lines in the sand I've drawn after 25 years of keeping my word and being crapped on by the people out there. I never make a loose commitment that I cannot keep. I do not make promises I cannot keep.
I totally understand.
However little they are, whether it's delivering a bag of groceries or it's bringing, my friend, whatever it is, whether it's
our brother first. And if your brother craps on you, And you still love him, you have a great reward in heaven.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So,
absolutely. So, nobody's arrived. I didn't say that I have.
If you don't forgive him for his own sake, forgive him for Yahweh's sake.
Already. Absolutely. It doesn't mean that I necessarily have to like what happened, and I certainly can discuss what happened and ask that it not happen again. if somebody's offended you.
Well,
you
right.
go to them
well,
and you tell them,
just,
right?
I'm just trying to explain it. It's hard sometimes.
Yeah,
if a guy doesn't work, if a guy's a contractor, I don't know who did this to you. I don't know. I don't want to know.
No, I don't. But I'm not mentioning names. That's not important.
If I didn't
it's
work 3-4 days in a row, and you know, I've had maybe 10 days work in the last 4 months, you know, if I didn't work 3 or 4 days in a row and I get a job, I just got to drop what I'm doing and do that job, you know?
Of course. I agree. I'm out here in California all on my own without any backup, you know, taking care of a 2-story house, trying to work, doing, you know, I understand we are all sometimes 20-hour days and it's hard and lack of sleep and just a
yeah,
lot
well,
of stuff going
all
on. Sure.
None of,
yeah,
you know,
mercy triumphs over justice. One thing I understand is that I live by every word that proceeds out of his mouth because I know that's what I will stand before him and give an account to. And that always quickens my mortal body and quickens my mind as to what I am to do. And that living by that as well as listening to that still small voice and wanting to walk out my salvation with fear and trembling, knowing the terror of the Lord and knowing that whatever I do unto the least of them, I've done it to him. I just take that seriously. However, we are going to mess up. It's the motive, and I know he sees that. But I still will express my disconcerted or concerns, and if I'm not wanted to share those things, then I can, you know, just be quiet. That's okay, too. No problem.
Well, if thy brother does thee wrong 77 times, 7 times, 7 times, or however many, and says, I repent, forgive him.
Absolutely.
But when he doesn't say I repent, you don't have to forgive him. You know, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Well, thank you for letting me vent. I appreciate
that.
Oh,
that's okay. That's
it
okay.
It happens a lot. My friend that was supposed to show up today never called, and you know, I guess it's just I lived 51 years and was learned to live a real tight and right life, and Mom said, don't ever make a commitment you can't keep or make a write a check you can't cover and all that kind of stuff. And so I guess it's just something a lot of folks haven't had that privilege of having parents that absolutely, you know, made sure that they did those things as you're supposed to train up a child in a lot of those disciplinary areas. So I was just maybe more fortunate than other people because my parents were.
Well, right. I'm going to tell you the truth about my childhood. My father was in the bar and my mother was working.
Yeah.
You know, and I was raised without that discipline. I mean, when my mother was there, I had discipline, but she was usually working. You know, that's the way it is. We are, our behavior is nature. It's solely genetic. Don't get me wrong. But we also develop habits out of nurture or a lack of nurture.
Mm-hmm.
And those habits affect our lives. There's no doubt.
I appreciate that. My word is my bond, and I want to be able to be a blessing. And I just had a desire for a long time to walk in that spirit of excellence like Daniel. And
well, we all try. None of us are perfect, but we all try.
Right,
and
exactly.
And some of us are a lot less perfect than others.
Yeah, well, perfection I don't even think that I'm going to attain, honestly, until that day.
Well, none of us can. I mean, Adam
Not
and Eve wore the Shekinah glory, and they weren't perfect, were they?
Not until I put all this stuff off. I die daily. Oh, my goodness.
Adam and Eve had the glory of Yahweh, and they weren't perfect either.
Praise Yahweh. Hmm.
How you doing, Greg?
Good, Bill. How are you, brother?
All right, good. Good to see you out.
Enjoyed your conversation here with Winky.
How's it going? You ready for tomorrow? You're not on tomorrow. Who's on tomorrow? Gerald's on tomorrow, right? If I don't look at the talk show schedule, I'm lost.
Yeah, I'm glad I called in because I showed up as Crystalios, and I'm like, oh, I forgot to go in and change my pin. So I took care of it. I'm off.
Well, we would have changed it for you tomorrow. That's no problem.
I know, but then I couldn't call in here and show up as my name, you know.
No. No, that's good. I was wondering, actually, who that was as Crystalios, but that's all right.
Yeah, as soon as I saw it, I jumped off and went in and took care of my talk show business and came back. I'm doing well.
I'll tell you who's going to win tomorrow in Massachusetts. The Jews are going to win.
Yeah. I don't get the whole psyop that there's even any contest. It's all, you know.
I don't even know what's going on in Massachusetts. What's going on in Massachusetts, Greg?
Well, you know, it's supposedly the Republican guy. I think his name is Brown. And I don't really follow politics anymore because I realize the Jews pull all the strings for both parties. But apparently the Republican guy has a chance to overtake the Democrat guy. And if the Republican guy wins, then the Democrats lose their filibuster-proof majority. But I don't believe any of it. I just the Jews so control it that I don't want to read papers anymore and say that things have a chance to work out because I don't believe any of it.
Well, right. The bottom line is the Jews are going to win. No matter who wins, the Jews are going to win.
The Jews are going to win because they control every politician.
They'll get the best election that their money bought. I'm sure.
What politician do they not control on the national level, you know?
Right, because there's no politician that doesn't need that corporate money, is there?
No. You know, and there's none of them that are strong enough to stand up against Jew money. I mean, you're talking infinite money, infinite power. Well, not infinite, but in this worldly realm, as powerful as it gets. So I just believe every single one of them are subverted, maybe to different degrees. But I don't even vote anymore. I can't even bring myself to vote. You
right,
know, because
11, my mother's family is from Massachusetts, and I'd be the first to volunteer that they're all screwed up. That they worship the Kennedys like they're gods. You can't say anything bad about the Kennedys. And Jack Kennedy, I think Jack was a good man. But all the rest of them, they've been the biggest screw-ups in the world, and Teddy and Carolyn and Bobby's kids, and they're all, I wouldn't give you a dime for the whole bunch of them, unless I could give you a dime and you throw the whole bunch of them in the ocean. That I might give you a dime for.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you could say that about just about any of these politicians anymore. You know, we have been, basically our country probably from the early 1900s, you know, we haven't had a president that hasn't been Jew-chosen. And I'm guessing the majority of Senate and Congress at this point are Jew-controlled. Most of them probably Jew-chosen, certainly Jew-controlled. And the small handful that may put up any kind of, I wouldn't even use the word battle, but maybe they're not completely on board. They've been marginalized to the point where it doesn't really matter.
Well, that's the thing. Jack Kennedy was not on board. So they blew his brains out, and every other Kennedy lost his mind.
Yeah.
It's like the one of them lost his mind literally, and it affected every one of them.
I mean, it's clear to me, Bill, that we're under the judgment of Yahweh at this point. We have, you know, we have a hybrid creature as our president. We have homosexuals that run the Senate and are some of the key people in government, and there's not a single worshiper of Yahweh that is involved in our government that I'm aware of. You know, there's many that, you know, make the claim that they're a Christian, quote unquote, but...
Well, being a Christian today is being a Judeo. I mean, it's a Christian Zionist.
It means nothing. Yeah, it means you support Israel, which means the Jews control you.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's why I qualified that by saying I don't know that there's a single worshiper of Yahweh in the
absolutely
entire government.
Not. Absolutely not.
I would think not. So we are clearly under some type of divine judgment from Yahweh to be in our current situation. I hate the fact, and I'm vexed daily when I look around me and see the Jewish destruction of our country and our way of life and our blessed race. We're being destroyed every day. You know, we're truly the lambs for the slaughter. And yet Yahweh is allowing this to happen, and I mean, I'm not all right with it, but I really don't know what to do about it. So, you know,
well,
we're
supposed to learn from it. We're supposed to learn from it. When Yahweh says that I will hand their kingdom over to the beast, Revelation 17:17, there's no man that's going to resist that. None of us are ever going to resist that.
No.
That's
no, there's no resisting this. I mean, it's way too powerful to resist. You just try to survive it, you know, and you appreciate moments like this where you get together with those that worship Yahweh and that see the blessed fact that we're born into the true elect group of people on this planet, the Anglo-Saxon race, and people that have that understanding. and you gain strength from that, from seeing that and from being with people that see that, you know. So, but we live in a very hard time right now, no question about it.
Well, the parable of the unjust judge and the woman who kept going to this judge for mercy. And finally, the judge said, all right, I'll get your vengeance and I'll take care of your adversary and we'll fix things. And she had to beg him and beg him and beg him. And finally, he got tired of hearing it. So he basically went and got her justice.
The unjust judge had to be a Jew.
Well, the bottom line is that we are the woman. Israel is the woman seeking this justice. And
right,
we
redress.
we think that God is screwing up for not coming and helping us out of this mess. And,
right.
And that's, but
wasn't
eventually
she an example of Esther? Was she an example of Esther?
I don't accept Esther as a canonical book. I talked at last week's program here at length about Esther.
Okay. I'll have to listen to that.
And we could—I don't want to cover it again so soon, but I could talk at great length about Esther.
I'll listen to your replay.
Oh, that'd be great.
Bill, I gotta agree with you on Esther. I also did not accept it.
I can't even remember what. I'm sorry, Greg. I can't even remember what hour it was in, Linda. Maybe some of the people on the forum might remember.
All he says, we have to do all we know to do and then just stand. We draw the line and we just have to keep being faithful stewards. I tell people every day, what do you need to do? You need to exercise, take care of your suit, get a little supply here, buy an extra pair of socks today. Just a little bit of something every day and keep up and just be due diligence. I mean, we've got how many hours in a day besides our sleep? I mean, all I have time to do is just do those things, take care of our suit. Read the word, pray, you know, just...
Well, right, and try to pull your brethren out of the fire. That's the best we could do.
Yeah. You know, write emails, make phone calls, reach out to people and be loving to them, and hopefully they'll listen. And if they don't, like I told the other pastor, brush off my shoes. I've done all that I can do. I have given the warning. I have done the Ezekiel Watchman 33:18, chapter 3, duty. I see judgment coming. No one will stand and say, why didn't you tell me? Every person that I come in contact with, every neighbor, handing out DVDs, go to the market, whatever, you know, he leads you to do, that we would just obey and do that and always be about the Father's business. And there's a peace about that pressing in where that believer's rest can be realized.
Have you ever seen a 9/11 Missing Links DVDs?
That's been a long time since I've done any of that. I have.
Well, if you're going to hand out DVDs, that's a good one to start with, I would think. That's all. I was going to suggest that. That's all.
Yeah, I'm not buying for Mr. Jones. That was I don't remember how I got in realizing with
Mr.
him.
Mr. Jones.
They just call me Mr. Jones. I can't believe somebody. I just don't understand because I don't even tell a little. You know, I mean, I just tell it like it is. I don't have a nanoparticle of silver on my tongue. Okay?
I'm sorry. I don't have a reference. I don't have a reference to the Mr. Jones thing. You've got me lost.
Alex Jones.
Oh, okay.
Just call
yeah,
me Mr. Jones.
Anybody that doesn't identify the enemies of Yahweh is a
I don't know. I don't know how somebody gets up there and plays that game with people and you think that you're going to make it into the kingdom. I don't think so. You are absolutely, because what is the definition? Can you tell a lie with the truth? You darn right you can, because you leave one element out and you've just caused deception, because the definition of a lie is not something that's really all blatant. It's the intent to deceive. And I could tell you the truth.
Well, most of the lies
you.
That the media tells us are by omission.
Exactly. And the sin of omission is just as grand as the sin of commission. Tell that to the people in the church. They don't even get that. Okay? They don't even get that. I don't understand.
being lied to the most. I mean.
Well, what about getting home and getting in your prayer closet and getting before him? I used, you know what, my as a little, you know, baby, wearing my diapers, dirtying them up all the time. You know what I got on now? I got some training pants on. Hallelujah. Yeah, okay. We went from diapers to training pants, so it tells you where I'm at. I'm still working hard.
Okay.
But I would go to the Bible teacher.
That's all right.
I would have so many questions for him, I drove him crazy. And you know what he brought out one night? He said, you know that scripture in Proverbs, iron sharpens iron. Now, mind you, he'd been in the ministry for some time, and I didn't even know what he was telling me, but it was like, boy, Linda, you're really causing me to have to sharpen my skills because, you know, like Pastor Eli will tell you, okay, enough of the questions because, you know, my brain is just going like, you know, he's made us to be brilliant. He's made us to be, you know, IQs of 125, 150, and, you know, that's how he's made us. He's made us excellent. And then we develop what's already been birthed in us and we cause it to manifest by the development. Even if your parents weren't all okay, he put something on the inside of you, Bill, that's manifest today. Praise Yahweh. Your teachings are fan that was birthed in you. And so I just get excited. I just get excited and I love to ask questions because I'm hungry and I'm thirsty.
I get excited with all you guys.
You know, I mean.
And at James's age, if you get excited, it's dangerous.
What was that? I didn't understand that.
Hey, Linda, do you live anywhere near Merced?
Oh, my cat wanted to get on the conversation. Hang on a second. Let me introduce y'all to my girlfriend, Lacey. She's my little girl. Here you go. You want to say hi? There you go. I bet you that's the first time y'all ever had a cat pop in on the show, huh? She's funny.
We usually have Edomites pop in. I'd rather have cats.
I'm a Southern California gal down here close to where, Southern California, it would be, I am trying to figure where, I don't know if you know any landmarks. It's definitely.
I used to live down there until I was 23.
Whereabouts? What?
Oh, God, I could talk to you for hours just about that. I went to George Washington High School. I left Gardena. Let's see, where in the hell was El Segundo, Gardena, Canyon?
Oh, you were
thing.
In L.A. County.
What's that?
Yeah, you were in L.A. County.
Yeah, I lived in Inglewood and Lenox and Torrance.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, you poor thing.
Gardena. I went to El Camino College. Let's see, El Camino College. I went there.
Back well, I'm down here in San Diego.
Well, he's a lot. Let's see, you guys are closer to each other, I think, right?
Well, I didn't even know any of y'all. I had anybody out here in California. They go, "What are you still doing in California?" I says, "Yahweh told me to stay, and I got my house built on the rock, so I'm all right."
I can't get out of here.
I'm not worried. Didn't you say no fear? Now, I don't know what part of that I'm not supposed to not understand, but I just get it because I have to walk by faith.
Where do you live at?
I'm down in, you know where DeVore area is?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, yeah.
North end of San Francisco. I'm not in the city limits now, folks. He has me tucked away kind of.
You guys are closer to each other than I am, too. You guys ought to get together. You're only a few hundred miles away from each other.
She's up north. I know some people up there in Temecula. She's up that far.
Oh, gosh, that's only an hour away from me.
Yeah, because I'm way down here in El Cajon area. She knows probably knows where that's at.
Right.
About 15 miles from the border, you might say. So that's how far down I am compared to where she's at. She's in a better part of Southern California than we are.
Yeah, you're in a bad place, I'm sure.
It's not good. Well, where I am, not too bad. Because it's pockets, but you know I could you could go to places here in San Diego where it's all brown.
Oh,
I mean,
sure
you
feel that way.
Don't speak of the English, they say.
I know. When I was in the Navy, I was there.
And I ask them one little question in their language, por qué, and they say something, and I'll say, this is the United States. This is not Mexico. You belong down there. Of course, they get all excited, but, you know, that's just the way it is here. I grew up here, so.
I know it's not the way it used to be. I was raised in L.A. since back in, well, I've been in California for all my 72 years, and it's just not like it used to be, that's for sure. But I totally agree. I love everything you guys say. You guys, we're all in step.
Well, I know I'm 68, and
I was thinking you were way younger than me.
I'm just younger, not way younger.
Yeah, but that's just a chronological age, y'all. That's just a chronological age. You have three. You have three different ages. You have chrono, bio, and psycho.
Four. Talking about the world right now. But I moved into San Diego. My dad did. He was in World War II, so we come out here in 45. My grandmother lived here. And then ever since 45, I've been here. And I've seen it change a lot. A whole bunch.
My dad was in the Merchant Marine back in that during World War II.
World War II, that was another war started by the Jews.
Yep.
Kill our people. I mean, you had the Germans here, German descent, fighting and killing our brethren over there in Europe.
Oh, I know.
The Englishmen, and the Jews are sitting back just, you know, rubbing their hands together, collecting the money. But I'm just wondering, when I heard Bill tonight, and I heard something on tonight about Haiti. And what gets me about Haiti is a lot of people don't know, 200 years ago, they slaughtered all the whites.
Yeah, I know about that, too.
And as I heard, it was on another program, I was listening to Hoskins tonight live, and he was talking about it, and I have one of his books. Where they came along and women were pregnant, they sliced their bellies open, took the baby out, and put it on a pole, like a flag.
They're straight animals.
Yeah, and they took two-year-olds and three-year-olds and did the same thing. And then they want to come over here. Wait a minute. They took over that land, you know, which was feeding the world on coffee, sugar cane, they had coffee, sugar cane, and cotton. They were the 75% producers, 60 to 75% on this stuff. And when the blacks took it, they took over all that. They said, "We don't need it. We're going to do this." And we got our god, voodoo. That's who they worship. They made a contract with voodoo. And then now they want, you know, with this clown sitting in the White House, we're going to give our tax dollars and our time. These Christians out here are so stupid. They're dumb as a stump. Here you're taking a country that God usually, when he sends a major earthquake, usually it's judgment of some kind.
Well, you know, the English word crisis, you know where that word came from? That word came from the Greek word krisis. It's the same word. And krisis means judgment.
There you go. I mean,
our ancestors knew when they called it a crisis. They knew what was going on.
Here we have one over there. And we want to run over there and help them. But to my understanding, the best thing that we should do is stay away from them and send all these other ones that we got over here back. But right now, it's like you said earlier, Bill, you said we're under judgment ourselves.
That's right. Totally.
Well, yes, we are. And we're going to stay under that judgment until our people put away the pornography and all the rest of the Jew distractions, professional sports, pornography, and everything else that feeds the Babylonian system.
Well, Pastor Dan Johns said a long time ago, probably about 5 years ago, we started listening, and he said this country is coming into a judgment, or it is in judgment. It's going to get worse. You know, he said that a long time ago.
Yeah, it's going to get worse, and a couple of million Haitians would be just the way to do it. I mean, it's a definite recipe for disaster.
Amen.
I mean, wherever Africans go, they export Africa. And if you bring in more Africans, you're going to end up with more Africa. That's just the way it is.
You're going to end up with all kinds of crap.
They don't know anything else. Well, of course.
Bill, can I ask you what you know about Bill Deagle? It seems like a lot of people know who he is.
I don't have a clue.
I've listened.
I don't pay attention to anybody. I'm sorry. People, you know, like.
I was really I was disturbed. I heard him say today that, I mean, you know what these people do with their excrement and stuff. They're just wicked people. And
they're filthy. And they're absolutely filthy people. I know them up close and personal.
He talks about bringing, we need to get supplies over there soon. We could bring some of them and put them in a little camp here because they're all these things he was saying on the radio, and I just really had a hard time to not call in and give him a whole, you know, opinion that I had about
Well,
he
should go live with them.
He should go down there. Absolutely.
You know, I used to tell white guys, I say this all the time.
He uses this intimidation. I've a line of tribe of Ephraim, and he does this and this and this.
Now,
on
how
radio.
Does he know that?
Well, listen, tell you what. The guy is a false prophet, okay?
Well, he's a clown.
I totally. But, hey, who's supposed to call the false prophets out? We are.
All right, we are.
And I called him, and he wouldn't take my call, and I left the message, and I don't care. None of them will call me back. Fine. They've been warned. The spirit
Amen.
Of Elijah and John the Baptist needs to say, enough, and shut your mouth. I decree and declare judgment on you in the name of Yahweh.
Amen, sister.
Blasphemy.
Put on your brass shoes and go for it. Brass.
I'm telling you what, you are confusing people, and he will hold you accountable, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth for what you are doing. You are a false prophet, and I curse the root of your operation and send derision and confusion into your camp.
Well, see what they're doing is they're using where were you when I was in jail? Where were you when I was hungry? And they're using all that, but what they've got to go through. Now, I listened to something today where it went through it. It had everything to do with our people. It had, you know, it had absolutely nothing to do with feeding blacks. You know,
exactly.
No, because that's throwing pearls before swine.
I told him, I said, what about our people? We've got people that are in tents that are hungry and starving here in this country. What is wrong with
here,
people?
Right here in San Diego. I can
exactly.
take you some areas where white people got signs out, you know, a mother with two daughters standing there, you know, with a sign out, need help, we'll work, all this type of stuff. And, you know, I'll slide by and give them some money, and they're really happy. Now, you look at these women, they're dressed modest and what have you, and they don't have any work. They don't have any food. But I told one, I says, you know, if you go home and paint yourself black or brown, they'll roll a red carpet out for you and give all the food you want.
Mm-hmm.
She knows that. She says she's been down there. They don't want to help her. She's got two kids.
Hey, you know what, brother? You're doing right. Just help her the best you can. But something you guys haven't brought up, Aristide or, I don't know, 15, 10 years ago, whenever that crap happened down there in Haiti, some of you guys might remember it, I'm sure. But from what I caught on the news, you know, they don't say much, but I remember little snippets from over the years with different people and this, that, and the other, like we all do. Hopefully you remember things from the past or they're brought back to you. The Yahweh brings it back to us. But anyway, things haven't, the infrastructure since back then has not done anything. It's been nothing but watts, and watts, still places in watts are just like they were back in 92 or 65 or whatever. It's never going to change. Just like Bill says, hey, they ought to go. I lived down there. I went to high school down there and was near watts and stuff. I'm lucky I'm still alive. You know, Yahweh's got something planned for me or whatever. But go down there, get around them jungle bunnies and see how long you last.
Well, you know, right here.
That's what I was going to say before. I've told the story probably 100 times here, but I told white guys coming into prison for years that if you're not a racist now, you will be in 3 months, and if you're not a racist in 3 months, you must be a fag.
I mean.
That's the bottom line. That's exactly the way it works out every time.
Well, you know, here in San Diego, there's a school that's approximately 70 years old. It's called Grossmont High School. When I went to high school here, we called it, what do they call it? Mines held it up. And there's another school over in the black area is called Lincoln High. It's about 40 years old. And they just recently, well, within the last 4 years, tore the whole thing down, spent multi-millions in there, in a black area, and built it. They built a real nice thing there. They didn't do it up here at Grossmont. And I went to the school board. I asked them, why did you do that? They said, well, the school was torn down, and they went into that a little bit. And I said, well, how come Grossmont is about 20 to 40 years older, and it's still standing, and they're still using it, but that one there, for some strange reason, is tore down? Well, you know, it's the students that go there, and I, you know, that's as far as they would go, but what they were trying to say is it's blacks that go there, they pee on the wall, they break stuff, they don't take care of anything. So what they're trying to tell me is blacks are an extra cost to our society. We gotta try and school them, which you're not gonna do. You gotta feed them, you gotta clothe them, you gotta house them. That's what we had to do when they were over here the first time, when they were slaves. We had to do all the same things, except before we got work out of them. Now we have to do the same things, and we don't get any work out of them, unless they work for the government.
Thanks for the Zionist Jew bastards.
Well,
yeah.
One of the most obvious things that always get neglected, I have never seen a white city get destroyed. There's no urban blight in white cities. There's no urban blight in... Yeah, I've been to Quebec City. Have you ever been to Quebec City? It's most of the buildings in old Quebec City are 350 years old, and they're beautiful. And there are no Negroes. Montreal, I mean, there's 100 cities in New England. They're absolutely beautiful cities where there are no Negroes. But go to Boston or go to southeastern Connecticut or to New York City or to North Jersey and Philadelphia and Newark and see all the Negro cities, and they're all destroyed.
Detroit.
Why is it that people don't notice that?
Because they weren't raised around them.
If you go to Billings, Montana, you could probably eat off the streets, right? I mean, I would assume. Or Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Well,
or
you know,
Carson City or whatever. But you go to Atlanta and see if you could do it, or to Houston and see, or to New Orleans and see if you could. What happens?
There's only about 1 out of 10 in the one you just said there in Atlanta. Yeah, there's only about 1 out of 10 that's a white, I guess, and even they are probably already got their nose rubbed into.
Well, yeah, but why don't people realize that? Why don't white people wake the hell up and realize that all of these black cities are destroyed? And white cities aren't destroyed. Cities with white people in them are just beautiful.
Because, Bill, you and I, one way or another, have been exposed, and these other guys...
Well, what I'm just trying to say is it's so obvious. The comparison is so obvious, it's incredible, and nobody notices it, or anybody that does is just so afraid to mention it. So just bring more
anything,
of them here.
If
just
you
bring
say
a couple of million
it,
more of them here.
If you say anything about it,
well, we should say everything about it every time we talk to somebody.
I do.
You have to say it.
I
do. We all have an obligation every chance we get with a white person to say it. And if there's a black person in the room, say it anyway.
I don't care about that.
You can put it in terms that are irreproachable.
When there's a black walking around, and I'm standing there, and my wife, if three or four of the whites around, so I feel a little bit safe, I'll say something, hoping that black hears every damn word I got to say. You know, because I get sick of this. Well, you can't say that. You hurt their feelings. They hurt my feelings.
They'll hurt your feelings. I don't want to mention what they'll do the first chance they get.
Exactly.
They'll hurt your feelings real deep first chance they get.
They'll hurt
exactly.
You bad.
They're omnisexual rapists. That's all they are.
Well,
exactly.
Haiti has been rebuilt by the United States, to my understanding, 2 to 3 times. Totally rebuilt.
And it's still a sewer. It's always going to be a sewer.
It goes right back. You go back at 10 years after you've rebuilt it, it looks like it was before you got started.
Of course.
You can't. A nigger is like a horse. You take care of your horse, you feed him, and you wash him down, But he does a lot of hard work for you.
That's pretty good.
That's the same thing with these damn niggers. You know, you
I don't know if any of them really do a lot of hard work, though.
They do if
the
you get the whip on their butt.
I'd vote for the horse. I don't know.
I worked at the hospital for 21 years, and for, I don't know, about, I think, maybe 5 or 6 of those years, I worked with a Tina Coleman. And I always thought she kind of looked like a rat, and she ate, you know, and she was Jew. And she did, and sloppy, I mean, dirty lab coat. I mean, she was just, I don't understand how women, I understand a guy kind of being a slob, but my mom taught me, I'm a total neat freak. Everything is totally clean, just like an Israelite keeps their house. You know, everything's, you know, dressed and, you know, trimmed, and everything's just in its place and a place for everything. You know how we are. Kind of fanatical like that. And she was a total, I said, don't even come. Don't, you can't even sit on my desk. Don't you even touch my pen. Don't you touch none of my stuff. You're a slob. Don't even come close. And one time I told her when I went in, I said, I was at the swap meet. And I said, I Jewed this guy down $5 more. Oh my gosh. I had to ruffle her feathers. I just had enough. I just had to throw that in. You just sometimes.
Hey, Linda, you got a pencil and paper right there handy?
Well, how about a pen? Will that do?
Okay, that's fine. I don't want to say too much, but let's see, 209-756, 2759, and her name is Barb.
209-756.
James is giving other people's phone numbers out on the air again.
They have a lot. They have a lot in common. You guys have a lot in common.
Okay, 209-756, and what's the
wait
last?
Wait a minute. Yeah, 756. Yeah, 2759.
Okay.
And her name's Barb. Just you guys have a lot in common with a lot of things.
I'm a real firecracker.
Oh,
but,
she is too.
I didn't come here. I'm telling you, my pastor and I shared it with him today. He called.
Hey,
me.
I love everything you've said. Everything. Hey, you got.
Well,
I love you. I don't
you
even
know
you. I love you.
You know what I got? I was raised by parents from the South, and when I hear y'all talking in the room sometime, I'm thinking, gosh darn it, that sounds like my family.
Exactly, you
like
are.
That. I'm
we
in
are.
California.
We are.
And we used to have heated conversations, and I go, you know, and they go, Linda, you need to calm down. I said, calm down.
No,
I'm just getting started. Are you kidding me? This is what I grew up with. What is wrong with you? People are dead. Are you cloned? Are you a drone? What's wrong with you?
Hey, I hear you. Hey, if you've only been hooked up with it for 3 weeks, I've been with it since 71 or so. So calm down a little bit. Just suck it up, and just like every. Just like everything you guys talking, I suck it up. I love it. But anyway, give her a ring when you get off. When you get off.
And you know, I believe that integrity. Like I
think about 18 people already called her.
Wait, what did you say? What did you say? Sorry, I missed the punchline.
The ADL is calling her now, so she'll be happy to hear from.
Well, I'm. Hey, she. Hey, we're all on that list.
You know what? It doesn't matter. You know what? They put work trucks in front of my house. They came tonight at 6:30 tonight. Verizon came. I said, I don't want your Fios lines. I don't watch TV. I'm leaving the country before the rioting starts. Don't come back again. Don't send me nothing. I don't want this, you know. They're all that brainwashing stuff. They want those special lines coming in. You want to watch me. I said, no, you take that oil, you anoint, you trust that bubble to be put over you, that protection. He can make you invisible.
Exactly.
If necessary. He'll do whatever it takes to protect his own. I told him, Father, I'm going to run out there. I'm running to the battle. You're going to have to hold me back because I'm going to tell you what. You've made me to be a warrior princess on the front line. You said, I've not called you to mess around in the mess hall with the rest of the Christians. I've called you to be a frontline warrior. You've been a fighter all your life. Somebody messed with your family, you kick their butt. They touched your brother, they messed with you. Oh, don't let Lynn. Oh, you better not because you know what? You bet.
Hey,
and
I
that's
love
what
you.
I'm going to do. And I'm going to defend you to the death. I don't ever say I'm going to do something, and that's why my word is my bond. I'll live for you. I'll die for you. Whatever it takes. I told him that, and I said I meant it because my word means something to me and to him and to the demons who will fear and tremble and run from me as in stark terror, which I was told that that would happen. And a pastor ran away from me one time.
Oh, I totally believe you.
Yeah, and I said, you know what? Because you don't walk with a double mind, a double heart, and a double tongue. And I said, Father, you're going to have to watch over me because I am, you know how I am. He says, I know.
Linda, we are in the minority, girl. And I can see it more and more every day. But, hey, it's just the way it is. Like Bill says, it's the way it is, and that's the way it is.
Praise Yahweh. I
yeah.
love y'all's spirit. It's just, it's so precious to hear. I've looked for other family with fire for 25 years, and it's just a blessing. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's a blessing that we can get together like this. It's just, you know, just like Patricia, if she led me to you guys. Sorry about that, Patricia.
Well, I'm
yeah, we know it's all her fault.
I'm a dietitian, y'all, for 30-some years, and I became one because I told him I wanted, he helped heal me. I should have been dead. Look at what he saved me from. 3 major motor vehicle accidents, 3. Knocked off a bike, threw 30 feet through the air, landed on the asphalt, walked up to the sidewalk. Oh, my gosh, my tent. And then another accident, car was totaled. The third accident, car was totaled, and I walked away from them all.
We
and
sound.
Many, and it's just, see, he will protect you, folks. Don't ever fear, for he's not given you a spirit of fear, but of power, of love, and a sound mind. And you say when you get up, oh, you're not afraid, but them demons, they're going to be afraid because you come to do business. Arise, let God arise. Yep, you always rise, and his enemies be scattered. And he ought to be afraid. Oh, no, she's up again. Here she comes. We better run because you know she'll cast us out. I walked up to some lady. She wanted her demons so bad. She wanted her demon so bad, and she and I walked up, and I just knew what I was looking at. And I said, you know who I am?
Hey, Bill.
And she, I didn't know her from Adam, folks. This is so cool. She said, you're one of the chosen ones. I've never met this lady in my life.
I totally agree with her.
She wanted them demons, but I would have cast them out of them if she wanted. But they want to keep them, folks. So
hello?
That's what we got
Linda,
to deal
hello,
with.
Hello. What's up, Mike?
Sorry.
How you doing? Coasting?
You know, I got to tell you, Bill, you know I'm not the kind of guy that's going to BS around. Mine only went in here that has my boots jacked all the way up to my chest right now because it's so deep in here. Hey, come on, guys. Let me lace my boots.
I'm a little freaked out, too.
Oh.
What's going on?
Did I miss anything, you guys?
Yeah, you could have called a little sooner, but that's all right.
I was chewing out some in-laws, telling them not to feel sorry for the Haitian refugees that were getting shipped over here on military C-17 cargo.
Are they shipping them over here already?
Oh, hell yeah.
Shipping them
hell
over,
yeah.
But shipped over by the thousands. They're chartering private jet planes to Orlando, Miami, Tampa. They already got them up in New Jersey. They're shipping them over.
Atlanta.
You knew this nigger president was going to ship over thousands of these fucking so-called nigger refugees and give them some more machetes so they can off the rest of the white people in this country.
But see, now you're thinking like me. I think we need to ship them not money, food, water, but machetes. I think we need to be shipping over millions of machetes. Everyone should have a machete in both hands. That's all you're going to get from us is machetes.
We should campaign down there to finish off what the earthquake didn't. And while we're at it, we can go over there, the other half of the island, and wipe out the shithole of Dominican Republic, too.
Well, you know, it's What can I say? It's a test for our people, and we have to see which side of the line they're going to fall on. That's the bottom line. I mean, this is Jeremiah 31:28-30. There's no doubt in my mind. The day will come when I will sow the seed of the seed of man and the seed of beast into the house of Israel and the house of Judah, and all those who eat the sour grapes shall die. That means all the race mixers shall die. That's the way it is. And it's going to happen. That's the promise. But in the meantime, we got to put up with this crap. What can I say?
Yeah, in the meantime, we got to convert or try to recruit, not wrong to say recruit, enlighten our fellow Israelites.
Well, right. We have to pull our brethren out of the fire every chance we can get. We have to try to wake them the hell up.
And all these blacks, you know, politically speaking, are going to be Democrats, every damn one of them.
Well, that don't matter, Gary. Democrat, Republican, it don't matter.
I understand that part. But
and if you don't get, you know, it took me, I struggled. I was always a conservative. I was always a Christian conservative and not the typical Southern evangelical, believe me. If you didn't get it after the Reagan years and you didn't get it after Bush 1, you have to get it after Bush 2.
Bush 1
because,
was a jerk.
Because the 2 years before this clown got in office, the Republicans had the House, the Senate, and the presidency for 2 years. They had a clear majority, and they did nothing. They did absolutely nothing to advance any conservative agenda one whit. And it just, you know, when are people finally going to wake up to that? That it doesn't matter if Democrats are in office or if Republicans are in office, the Jews are in office, and the same agenda is going to advance.
Well, I can tell you what they're going to do with all these Haitians is they need an army to come against us, to kill us when they go for the one world government. You know, you're going to be able to look out in your front yard and see one of these damn thing standing in your front yard with a machete that they gave him to kill you. You know?
Hey, they're already here. They've already got millions of son of bitches waiting ready
right,
with machetes.
What's another 5 or 6 million?
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I know it did say in Revelations that the Savior said he's going to open up the earth and it's going to swallow them.
Right.
In other words, it's going to help us out. Now, you know, I go, how's that going to happen? This is going to be interesting. Of course, a lot of people say it's going to be earthquakes going to open up and swallow them. I don't know.
Well, did you guys just hear that today already in Honduras? There was a 6-point quake in Honduras today.
Well, they'll be over there bringing them all over here, too, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. They felt it in Jamaica, too. I suppose there's a lot of aftershocks going on or secondary earthquakes. You know, when they say the scripturally that the earth is going to swallow them, I can tell you what that actually means because I'm going to be one of the key people that perpetrates that. So when I get a piece of property, I'm going to get a couple acres and dig a really long and deep trench and put a bunch of alligators in it and then blanket over it and a bucket of chicken on my side. And I'm going to call the niggers to come over here and eat some chicken. And they're going to get swallowed up by the earth is what, you know, scripturally what it is. But it's just going to be a big pit I dug with some alligators in it.
I know they make good alligator food. You know, and they're like cockroaches. You know, it's like Mexicans down here. They populate so fast. They all these families of 12 little Mexicans in a row, and we're feeding them.
Yep.
And I'm going, what? Now they're bringing over more niggers for us to feed. It's some sick crap. You know, it's terrible.
Welcome to the club, brother.
And then when I say they, you know, we're talking, don't have to say it's the Jews.
Yep.
Bringing all this crap in to kill us because they are Esau Edom.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And Eli, yep. Give a talk on that.
Hey, I was going to let everybody know that's interested. Tomorrow night I'm going to be starting a several-part series with Sword Brethren on this book I'm going through, and he's getting a copy of it himself, too. The book is actually written possibly by a Jew, but it's got a lot of vital information. It's called The Jewish Threat, written in 2000. It gets into basically supposedly anti-Semitism within the U.S. military throughout the last two centuries, and it's an astonishing amount of people, of generals and colonels in the last 100 years, who have consistently said since the early 20th century that if we let the Jews in and we let the non-whites in and they're faster breeding races, this country is going to be in the rapid decay. I mean, it goes through everything. It talks about Stoddard, Grant, Woodruff, you know, the Anglo-Saxon war against the Jew, the Bolsheviks, everything. And it's all this military intelligence throughout our government. It gives you a little optimism to think that there was quite a bit of people within our government that, you know, that we never got to even hear about because, you know, these Jews have always owned the media so hardcore that the information hasn't spread out that there have been allies, high-ranking, out there that have known this issue. So we're going to do that five-part series starting tomorrow evening on my radio show. And I haven't been doing one for a while, so I figured we'd get one going. I like the ones that Fink and Sword Brethren were doing, these Germany and the Jews and Russian Bolshevism series so much, I decided I wanted to get my own going.
Well, the Bolsheviks, if you go back and study what they did to us, I mean, and to our women and to our children, it was just like the blacks over there in Haiti and peeling our little babies and cutting the bellies open of the women and pulling the babies out and doing the same thing. The Bolsheviks did some similar things.
Yep.
But have you listened to any of the programs we did, Gary?
Huh?
Have you listened to any of the programs we've been doing?
Yeah, I think that might be where I heard it.
Yeah,
we're not the source of all information, but it's from a biblical perspective, and that's not done too often.
No, that's what you take what's happening in the modern times, and you go right to the Word, and here's what it says. And that's what's interesting about when you and Eli get going, it's pretty good. And when you and Clifton get going, it can be. Clifton sometimes is not as strong as far as modern times as Eli is, but you managed to pull that off with Clifton, you know, because Clifton's older than me.
Well, right, Clifton's up there, but he does pretty good. He knows his scripture, there's no doubt, and he's just, I wish I could record some of the phone conversations with him. I'm sorry that I have. It's, they're impromptu, and it's, he's at his best when he's impromptu.
Well, you know that.
And, you know, we have these extemporaneous phone conversations. I mean, I've been talking to him for 8-9 years now on the phone. I don't know, at least. The first couple of years I corresponded with him, I didn't talk to him on the phone. Prison phone calls are pretty expensive. Clifton's it's a matter of getting him, once he gets warmed up and relaxed, but it's hard for me to get, you know, for him to get to that point.
It's really something,
you know,
when you call Clifton is, who am I speaking to? Who do you think you're speaking to?
Yeah, right. He's very stiff and formal on the phone. And it's hard to just get him to relax and let loose. If I could get him to relax and let loose, he'd have a great show. He really would. But he's he's not accustomed to it, I guess.
He has a little fear out there of what's going on. But, you know, again, he's old, so he gets a little apprehensive. Can understand that.
Hey, you
well,
guys.
I don't
just
think he's worried about what the enemy might do to him by any means. Clifton's not worried about that at all. He's pretty pretty steadfast, you know, when it comes to that.
Well, he wouldn't like it though. See, so that's, I mean, I'm saying we're all like that. But we try to stay away from it if we can. But the thing that I'm saying is, if Eli, in the work that he has done, he's abreast to what's happening now and then what the Bible says about it. And then when you and him, Bill, get together, then it becomes more obvious. You know, my story is always, and people say, do you see this happening or this is happening? I said, what does the Bible got to say about it? You know, you go to the Revelations, and then you guys went through Enoch. You go to either one of those, and it tells you all about it right there. What's happening is exactly what's prophesied. Now, I don't like it. You know, as a matter of fact, I jump around sometimes and God say, why are you doing this? Because he wants to. That's what a friend of mine told me. He says, it's because he wants to. He prophesied it. He says, this is going to happen. It doesn't mean that I have to like it, but it means it's going to happen. And it's not nice.
Well, but it's every Christian's, you know, should be able to understand why it has to happen.
Well, you sit down and you think about it for a minute, Bill, and you think about Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. I mean, he saw all this happening right before his very eyes, right there in Jerusalem.
Well,
we're seeing it again now.
It's the same pattern that's repeated itself. We're seeing the same thing again now for basically the same reasons.
And then what happened is his own nephew, who was the king Zedekiah, threw him in the sewer. You know, he's seeing this happen before his very eyes, and he was very saddened. And so it's like myself, and I didn't get the fellow's name that's in his 70s there. Father Time.
James.
Anyway, and James and I have been there. We've seen when this country was different.
Oh, big difference.
I remember when I was a kid, I'd get on my bicycle, take my .22 rifle, put it across the handlebars, and off I'd go, you know, to shoot whatever I'm going to shoot at. Get on your bicycle today, some kid, and put a .22 rifle across his handlebars on his bicycle and see what happens. Boy, they'll have him and you and everybody else in the pokey for that. But then nobody paid any attention to that. Guys used to carry guns around the back windows of their truck. All kinds of things like that. That's not here today.
I've actually seen that in Vermont. They do that still in Vermont, or at least they were still doing it in the 80s in Vermont.
They do it here still. I've seen a lot of people riding around with still the gun racks in the back. You know, as long as people just keep doing that, I mean, you have the rights to do that. I mean, even with the Jews taking away the rights the way they have, you still have the right to do that. And I don't see why people just don't invoke that more often instead of having this fear. It's like this psychological thing that they've instilled in our head to prepare us for anti-gun laws, for even harsher ones than they've already done, to make us think that we're not allowed to carry a gun like that anymore. And you still are. It's
well, right. But, you know, you don't see it here in New York. And I'm in farm country, and I don't see it. I ain't seen it yet.
Not in California either.
Nope, I'm down here in San Diego, and you don't see that anymore. And I agree that it's probably, but you get stopped by the sheriff here or a cop, and you try to instill your rights. The next thing you know, your rights got you right down there in jail.
Yes, you go to jail. There was a guy in Milwaukee I know that was in West Dallas, about two blocks away from my sister where she lives. She grew up there. And this guy came out in his yard with his pistol on his side. He was doing yard work. And the brainwashed Judeo-Christian right across the street right away called the cops. Oh, my God, this guy's got a gun on him. Well, the cops ran, and they arrested him for disorderly conduct for having a gun on him. Super nice guy. You know, he wasn't doing anything wrong, had the complete right to do this. I mean, he was even on his own property. You know, it was a residential neighborhood. It wasn't like a farm where they would normally say it was okay. But he ended up getting arrested and charged with disorderly conduct. The media had a field day with it. He ended up beating his case because they couldn't charge him with anything. It's like, look, what are you getting me for? You can't. I'm allowed to carry this gun. If I want to walk down the street with it and go anywhere I want, I can. But that's the point. Nobody wants to even do that fight. And it's not even a fight that you would lose at. It's a fight you would win. This guy, the media ended up having a crap fit because he actually won in court. I mean, the judge was like, well, you know, there is no law. It says you can't carry a gun around. Well, of course there's not. There never has been. There shouldn't never be. So, you know, it just comes down to the fact that you got to get over that fear. Well, the sheriff's going to arrest me and put me in a clinic. Well, let them do that. And you know what's going to happen? You're going to win your case. Not only that, but you can act like a Jew and get a nice paycheck for them discomforting you for your infringing on your rights. Because as long as we let them just keep riding over us like that, I wish that I wasn't a felon and I had the right to carry guns. I would be walking down in the middle of nigger neighborhoods with an AK-47 on my fucking back with a fucking 75.
Hey, 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 hey.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's legal. That is perfectly.
No, I'm just talking about the.
I think he's talking about your F bombing the channel all over the place.
But, sometimes I get on fire, man. I'm just like, but
calm down.
That's one of the hardest things for us to work on because God talks about it. Is
if
we protect ourselves.
F bomb, but you know what I'm just trying to get at is like. I don't get disgusted at Jews for being Jews. I don't get disgusted at blacks or being as anybody for being what they are. I get disgusted at my own people for being fearful of these people. And that's what I'm hearing when the sheriff's going to arrest me and put me in jail for something I'm allowed to do anyway. And it's like,
you know, I was watching something on the net yesterday, and what it was this guy, somebody told him he could, if he was harassed by the police department's got to give you a complaint form. If you go in there and do that, they won't give you the complaint form, and if you keep it up, they'll arrest you. He didn't believe them. So he just kept doing it police station after police station, and he kept getting arrested. You know, he'd eventually get off, but it's a hassle for you. It's not a hassle for them. I mean, I saw in Chicago, they showed a picture of this cop came into this bar, and the barmaid was standing there, and he wanted to mess with her. She didn't want to. Next thing you know, he's jumping over the counter. He's beating her, hitting her in her face. Everything. And you're standing there, what is this? And nothing ever happened to him. They called the police on him. They walked, and the police just walked away. So you have a major problem out there. It's a war. It's a cold war. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of us don't have time to spend in the pokey. And I understand where you're coming from. I've been in that situation where I'm going to stand up to them. And I've been put in a pokey and all kinds of things. It's like standing up to the preacher over here in one of these churches. I went up and I asked him some questions, you know, that I know. It's in the Bible. Next thing you know, this preacher's yelling me at the top of his lungs, get out of his church, or he's going to call the police. All I was doing was telling him the Bible.
Well,
hey, here's the thing. I'm not trying to get things construed here where I'm saying, go fight an obscure thing where you're not going to win, like the tax laws. You know, a lot of people like these Jew Aaron Russo and his American Freedom of Fashion video want a bunch of idiots to go run out there and say, I'm going to stop paying taxes, and you're going to lose that war. But what I'm saying is if you don't fight the stuff that you're openly supposed to be able to do, and when did they come down and start threatening that talking about Yahweh is going to be illegal? When is that final step say that there's the fact that they threat, that they get you thinking it's going to be an inconvenience for you to go to jail for doing something that you're allowed to do, your founding fathers fought and died for you to do, when is it going to become time to say, you know, enough is enough? Because what they're doing is they're conditioning us to think that we can't carry guns when we can.
Exactly.
Obviously I can't, but, you know, and Bill can't either. But for those that can and should openly carry all the time, whether it is a little battle in court with it, because you're going to win that battle. Like I said, you can just look at this guy's case in West Dallas, which is a suburb of Milwaukee. And they had all the news clips when he won the case. And, I mean, it was beautiful. He won the trial. And now there's more people than ever in that area that are like, you know what, that's right, I can carry my gun, and I'm going to do it.
Amen.
You know, that's when it comes to time that they just need to invoke the invocation of a threat that it might be an inconvenience. Is it going to come down to the day where they say, you cannot speak about Yahweh, that we're going to shut up? Or is it going to come down to the time where we're uncomfortable saying that we can't carry a gun, so when they do come with the laws, nobody even says a peep? You know, and these are things right now we can fight that we're openly legal to do. I mean, it's just like I try to invoke people to go stand out in front of these lying Jew Holocaust museums with signs. I'm going to do that. I'm going to show you guys how that's done, but I'm sure I might even get punched in the mouth again by a big, tall, hook-nosed Jew like I did at this communist fest in Wisconsin. That's okay. I'll take it to the chin, and I'll keep riding, and I'll illustrate how vile these people really are. And when you face them with the truth, they don't have any choice but to be violent. But this is the thing, is we have to invoke what we have been, what God has given us, not even our founding fathers, not our government, what God has given us. That is the right to speak what we feel, and that is also the right to defend ourselves. And if that defense means carrying a firearm on you wherever you go, obviously there's some stipulations, you know, not going into a bank with a gun because it's a private business, and if they say no firearms in here, that's cool, you know, but this is the thing. We can't have this fear factor in us, so then when they come with the gun laws, we just lay over for it. And I was like, it's like Katrina. Oh, no, you're going to take my guns from my cold, dead hands. Well, they've already done it when people are thinking they can't even carry their own guns. They walked through Katrina and confiscated every one. They beat up an old lady right on TV.
And that's just absolutely amazing that nobody got, that none of them got shot.
You know what? Hey, you guys, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard down around the suburbs, down around where Katrina was, white guys still patrol and protect their own neighborhoods because nobody else will do it. Is that true or not?
You know what? You're probably right. There probably is that going on. And I bet you, as pessimistically as I'm saying everybody just gave up their guns in New Orleans, I bet you there was some firefights that we didn't hear about of some white Americans in their house that were just not going to have to get their guns taken from them. But we didn't probably hear about it in the news because that would have been like another Waco.
Well, I saw it in the news one time when that thing happened that the National Alliance immediately came out to the white enclaves around the area and immediately gave out food and clothes and stuff. I saw it on the news once and never saw it again.
Yeah, I'm sure there was that going on down there. And that's another thing. When the Jews got the upper hand on us right now, we're not going to hear our victories. That's why I'm going to really like enjoying doing this series of Sword Brethren, where we can talk about some of the victories or attempts at victories we've had throughout the 20th century in American military politics. Because it's just absolutely astonishing how many people have... there's over 20-some generals in here that have openly said, you know, the miscegenation of this country is going to decay, the protocol is signed, everybody needs to read it. The Jews are a disgusting, hideous breed of people that are going to destroy the Anglo-Saxon culture here. And it's just countless people in the military. And I attribute the fact that they haven't been able to do anything or wanted to spend that one opportunity to do something because... they haven't had this, even if it's a small minority, which is what else is needed, especially when it comes to whites. It's a very small minority that's ever needed to win a battle with whites. You know, the biggest wars ever in history of the world, the most vicious and fearful wars have always come from white-on-white wars. You know, those are where the real warriors come out and have some mysterious battles. And
it's a shame.
These people in the military, I think... have been waiting to see that public come out, you know, the farmers, the white middle class come out and start railing against these Jews on a grassroots level and not be scared to say that, so that if they came out and made a move, they know that they wouldn't be looking behind them hearing crickets, that they would go, okay, let's make our move and let's take this country back. But this is the thing. They got a lot more to lose than, say, a lot of us. You know, they have a lot more to lose. They have huge careers, you know, supporting their families, feeding their families, and not only that, you know, Jews come down a lot harder on people that have an ability to affect change than, you know, someone like us, you know, that might be running a talk show or having websites or whatever. You know, we don't have a lot to lose, so we're not a big threat. But at the same time, they need to see that minority of whites come out and say, you know, at a certain level, we're tired of this. We're not going to fear this. We're going to fight. We're going to stand on the lines behind somebody if they come out.
Well, they're doing that in Italy, Mike, you know, with the Italian National Guard.
Well, hello, John. How are you doing?
Hey, fine, thanks.
I'm going to introduce a good friend of mine, John. I've known him for several years. Actually, you had some questions tonight, didn't you, or...
Well, it's all kind of off topic, so I mean, you know, I don't want to break the, break the mood here.
Oh, there's no topic on my soapbox here. Nothing's topic here.
I come from a non-CI perspective, so I just want to. I mean, I'm not saying I'll ever become the CI, but I do have some questions about. For instance, this has been troubling me. How do you know that these Jews aren't, at least in a minority of them, like the Sephardics, aren't the same Jews who got thrown out of Egypt, just like they've been thrown out of like 100...
Because the Jews weren't thrown out of Egypt.
They're still there.
They were white people who left Egypt. They were white people that built that civilization in Palestine. The Jews are usurpers. They usurped that kingdom 2,200 years ago. They usurped England 200 years ago. They usurped America 100 years ago. They've never, ever built a kingdom. They haven't built a kingdom in 2,000 years. What makes you think they're the ones that built the kingdom 3,000 years ago?
Well, they did build the Egyptian kingdom. I'm saying they were thrown out of it.
Well, no. I'm talking about the Davidic kingdom. That wasn't them. That wasn't them that with Moses. That wasn't – Moses was a white man. He wasn't a Jew.
Okay. Well, all right. Fair enough. Hebrew – I mean, they were called Hebrews back then.
Well, the Jews, you know, they stole the name 2,200 years ago, 2,150 years ago.
Where are the Hebrews?
They stole the name. The Hebrews were white. The Israelites of the Old Testament stories were white. They were a white culture that the people we know as Jews today usurped.
They're Khazars.
They claim to be the people of the Old Testament. They're not the people of the Old Testament.
So, I mean, you say they developed it 2,150 years ago. Is that because the... what about the Book of the Maccabees? Have you ever read those in the Apocrypha?
Well, right. The Maccabees were white men, and they went out, and it says it in, you know, if you read the history of Josephus, and the Maccabees doesn't quite go down that far in history, but in 130 B.C., between 130 and 125 B.C., John Hyrcanus, who was one of the last of the Maccabees, he went out and he conquered Edomia and all the Canaanite tribes and forced them to convert to Judaism. And they all converted to Judaism. In fact, most of them did it quite willingly.
Well, the thing that he did, Bill, and I was talking with Eli about this, and he said he's going to have a little show with you about you and him, is when he did just what you just said, what he did is he says, if you guys get circumcised, you can become Israel. And
well, right.
You can become an Israelite.
Well, we don't know what he said because his words aren't recorded. All right? So don't go there. But, you know, he converted all of them in name converted to Judeans, to Judaism. They were all supposed to become circumcised. They didn't adopt the Hebrew religion. They kept their own so-called traditions, which are excoriated in the New Testament. And basically what we ended up with is all the ancient enemies of the Israelites of the Old Testament, a great number of them became Judeans, and that's what caused all the division in the kingdom in the New Testament between the various peoples. But
okay,
the people... The non-believing, the people that did not convert to Christianity, the people that converted to Christianity lost their identification as Judeans, and the people that were Edomites and Canaanites never converted to Christianity, and they retained the name Judeans, which eventually evolved into the word Jew. And they're the Canaanites and the Edomites, the Old Testament. The New Testament proves this. The Old Testament discusses it. The New Testament proves it. The Book of Maccabees helps the story a little, but not much. And the histories of Josephus fills in the blanks.
Hmm. Okay, the practice, or I want to get back on that. But let me ask you this. The practice of circumcision. Now, is that something that was developed by the Israelites?
Well, you know, there's no telling because, you know, the ancient Egyptians also practiced it.
Yes, they did.
And whoever had it first, you know, did the Egyptians get it from the Israelites? Did the Israelites, the Old Testament says it came from God. I kind of believe that. But that's immaterial. Did the old Israelites get it from the Egyptians? That could be an argument that's just theoretical because we have no records, do we?
Well, no, we don't. But now, the practice itself, you're in favor of that?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, we were the ancient white Hebrews had that practice, and there's no doubt, and they give their reasons for having it. But there's no need for that today. Today, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when I had five sons, and I regret having them circumcised. But, you know, when I was in my 20s and stupid, I just sort of went along with what the doctors wanted and what their mothers wanted. But if I had five sons today, none of them would be circumcised. You know, we have this Jewish culture, America, is basically what it boils down to. The doctors do everything in the hospitals except fellate the children like the rabbis do.
Okay,
and we don't know if they really don't do that. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I live in southern New York as well. Maybe we should – I'd like to talk to you or talk this over with you sometime.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm open for conversation.
Yeah, but hey, getting back to
I'm actually in central New York.
Oh, I see.
I'm about an hour above Binghamton.
Yeah, you're pretty far. About 3 hours.
Hey, Bill, the guy you're talking to on the phone was one of the guys that not Quest, not RV, but the other guy that was on the Missing Links tour. I don't know if you got to see him on a video or not.
Yeah, I saw his picture, but I can't recall off the top of my head.
Yeah.
The you know, the Greek writers, the Greek classics, it's written, those Israelites, those Hebrews, well, first, English is a Hebrew language. I don't know if you've seen my website. I mean, my website, I have some papers on my website identify hundreds and hundreds of English words that are cognate with Hebrew. And I could talk about the Hebrew history at great length, and I could talk about the settlement of Europe at great length. But basically, the white races are most of the white tribes of Europe descended from the Hebrews. And that might sound crazy to you, but I could discuss it. And I could cite all the classics, and there's 13 essays on my website that basically explain it.
So the Greeks, all people all the way from Britain, Spain, whatever.
Right. The Phoenicians are actually the Israelites, the Old Testament Israelites.
Bill,
one of the same people. The Greeks called them Phoenicians. The Greeks never used the word Israelites in any of their writing.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. The story, the account where Jesus was confronted with this Grecian woman and who wanted
excuse me. You know, she wasn't a Greek by race. She was a Canaanite by race.
Hold on. Now, from what I've read, she was Grecian, but also Syro-Phoenician.
Well, no, because Matthew calls her a Canaanite, and Luke calls her a Syro-Phoenician, and he calls her a Grecian because that would indicate her culture, not her race. Her race is definitely Canaanite. Her nativity is Syro-Phoenician, and her culture is Grecian.
Bill, are there about a million words in the English language?
I don't know how many words there are.
Okay.
I never opened up my dictionary and counted. I mean, I would say it's probably about a quarter million.
No,
I heard 700,000.
Well, you're interrupting the conversation with something.
I'm sorry.
Hey, John.
All right. Well, actually, so she was one of these Canaanites. Now, what is a Canaanite, though?
A Canaanite is basically a mutt. Okay? An Arab would be the Arabs descended from the Canaanites. And they're called Arabs because they're mixed. And a Canaanite, a Lebanese would be a Canaanite. And they all probably have some Greek and some Roman blood in them, and they probably have some blood from the Crusaders. And those people, some of them look pretty close to white, but they're not white. They're Arabs. The word Arab is a Hebrew word that means mixed. And they're mixed, and that's why they're called Arabs. And that they're Canaanites and other races, who knows? I mean, they brought Negroes up. The Arabs were the biggest perpetrators in the slave trade. They would buy the slaves from the black tribes in Africa and sell them to the Jews, and the Jews would bring them over here.
That's funny. You know, I had a Jewish history teacher named Buxbaum, and in Pace University, and he never mentioned the Jewish involvement in the slave trade. He only talked about the Arabs.
Well, of course, but the Jews were the biggest slave traders. They bought the slaves from the Arabs. Dutch Jews were the biggest purveyors of slaves to the Americas.
Go look in the records of Rhode Island, and when you go into the records, you'll find out that the back in those times in the 1700s, 1600s, the biggest slave traders became billionaires with a B by buying and selling trading slaves. What the Jew would do is they would go down to South America and around in there, get molasses, bring it up here, make hogheads rum, take it over there to where they bought the slaves, trade the rum for the slaves, bring the slaves back, and sell them for a tremendous amount of money. And these guys got super wealthy. And it's in the archives in Rhode Island. There's another guy that wrote some stuff on it, was Richard Hoskins. He's wrote a lot on that type of activity that went on. So Jews were not only involved in it, they are the slave trade.
Well, yeah, the you know, we all know slavery's got to be a rich man's sport, or it was. Because the plantation owners, shouldn't a lot of them have to be Jews as well?
You know, it's a very strong possibility. I've never looked into the genealogy to plantation owners. But,
yes.
You know, the
plantation owners, the rum refineries, the slave ship owners, all the way back to the Carnegie Institute, all, at least at a 90 percentile, were Jews.
Right. Well, I wouldn't doubt it for one bit, but I've never looked into it. But let me say that, you know, Virginia was founded as a corporation, the Virginia Company. North Carolina and South Carolina were actually gifts by the restored King Charles II to some of his, you know, to some of the people that got his family back to the throne, that he made a gift to those people of the Carolinas, and that's how the Carolinas were formed.
Most
of the colonies were actually formed as commercial ventures, the southern colonies especially.
Yeah, that's true.
And who owned the stock? I mean, the Bank of England, the Jews already had control of England when those colonies were formed. They already had, you know, at least economic control of England.
Yeah, 1698 is when they got the Bank of England established.
And they still got it.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Jews weren't, you know, the recipients of a lot of those land grants, which formed those plantations. I wouldn't be surprised one bit, but it's not, you know, I study early history. It's not my period.
Yeah, I got the documents to show all that. Matter of fact, there's a book, well, from that site that you're getting, the Andrew Dickey book. There's one on there. What is it called? Slavery. I'll have to get you that book, but it documents all the people that owned the plantations, all the slave ship owners, and black slavery was even more prominent in South America than even North America. I would imagine this whole Haiti thing was, you know, the reason they got all those Negroes down there in Haiti was, you know, part of a slave ship migration that it, that ended up happening there.
Right. Well, no doubt.
Well, I used to storm on those islands also. So, you know, the ones they could say store there if they didn't dump them in the drink. There's a movie out that was put out by the Jews, but it's very, tells on them. It's called They Came for Good. You pick it up in your library.
Yeah.
And you watch that flick, and it talks about they came over here in 1600s, and they came over here because they were kicked out of Brazil. Isn't that amazing? They cry about being kicked out of every nation in Europe, all of a sudden they're kicked out of some nations in South America. And they snuck in here. And when they came into New York, and they saw all these hangman nooses hanging down their gallows. And they talked a little bit about that and what that was for. And they went immediately underground, like right now. And as the movie goes along, it tells about how they got involved in banking, and I think it goes into a little bit about slavery and some of the things that they've done. But they polish it and they put a good light on it. But if you're one of us, you can see what's going on there, and you can get it in your library. That's where I got it. It's called They Came for Good.
You know, that's funny you mentioned that, because that was just the film I was trying to get uploaded to Fink, actually, not too long ago. I have it right here. It's actually a two-part PBS series.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to pull it up real quick here. They came. I have both of those films, actually. Yeah, and they spent a good light how, you know, they were the merchants, and they started the clothing industries, and they basically took over stuff because they were so good at business, and they were so prosperous.
Yeah, it's not that they're good at business. It's that they're good at favoring each other with money, and once they get the ability at monopoly, with a monopoly to create our money, that they are the recipients of all the loans, and they end up with all the property. That's the natural outcome of letting a it's like letting a cancer cell have all your blood. The only thing that's going to eat are cancer cells.
Yeah. You know,
they invest their money. they invest their money, and if they win, they get to keep it. And if they lose, they go to the American taxpayer, and we bail them out.
The only industry
right.
in New York and around in those areas,
well,
those factories were owned by Jews. They were the ones that were into the child labor, all that stuff that we hear about. It was the Jews that was doing that to us. And it's just a never-ending stop. You know, they cry about down there in the South with the slaves. They were doing the same thing up in the North. They would say, oh, well, you can go rent your own house. You can buy your own food. You're free. Yeah, but I only make $50 a week. Well, at least you're free. You know, you have a job and you're making money. Aren't you excited? No, I'm not excited, because you guys take a portion of that in taxes. But if it's some of that's in that movie, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, they say the word job actually means just over broke.
Well, I say this in jest, because I could prove what I say historically, but you know, the absolute proof that the Bible's not a Jewish book is that it's not a book of it's not a banking manual. If the Bible were a Jewish book, it would be a banking manual. It wouldn't be about history or religion.
Thank you. I want to ask you about the early Christians now. Basically, is that all the true Israelites converted to Judaism, I mean to Christianity, and the rest were just Canaanites?
Well, you know something? The New Testament basically teaches that there were a lot of traditionalists that resisted Christianity. And just like there's a lot of white people that follow the Jews today.
And resist the identity message.
There were a lot of traditionalists that did follow the Jews. There's no doubt. And eventually, if they stayed with the Jews, their blood would have been mixed with the Edomite and Canaanite blood. So if they weren't Jews then, they sure as hell are now.
Mm.
But yes, there were traditionalists that sided with the Edomites in the Christian, you know, at the dawn of the Christian era. Just like there always are. There's no doubt. But for the most part, the people that converted to Christianity were true white Israelites, and the scripture tells us that.
Yeah, but
the New Testament tells us that.
Remember in the Bible study that you had with Eli, and you guys were in Genesis, and it talks about the seed lines. You guys talked about his seed line, Satan, the devil, whatever you want to call him. And you talked about her seed line, Eve. And these Edomites and Canaanites and all these ites are of that seed line.
Well, they're of that seed line along with whatever races they mix with.
Yes. So that's
because there are nations, there are tribes of Canaan who have no genealogy at all. From Genesis 10 or from Genesis 3.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there were people here long before us. There have been people here for tens of thousands of years, but they weren't us.
No.
There's no direct cultural connection. Or you know, I mean, there's similar gene pools. There's similar genes because, I mean, that's the recipe of life. I mean, 99% of your genes are similar with an orangutan, but there's no direct cultural connection or historical connection with Cro-Magnon man or any of the races of people that have been here before. And Negroes and some of the non-white races have been here for tens of thousands of years before we are. White civilization appears in Mesopotamia in the Fertile Crescent about 5,000-7,000 BC. I'm not gonna mince over exact time frames for something so long ago where there's so scant evidence.
No.
But it's pretty clear that, you know, when Abraham was walking around in Palestine, there was no Germany. There may have been diverse white tribes that migrated into Germany, but none of them don't confuse forebears with ancestors. Don't confuse predecessors with ancestors. And some of those white tribes might be some of our ancestors, but for the most part, the ancestors of the Germanic tribes came from Mesopotamia, 700 BC. And the ancestors of the people that inhabited parts of Scandinavia and Ireland and most of Britain and the coastlines of France, the people that the anthropologists call proto-Celts are actually the Phoenician races, the Phoenician tribes that came from the Levant between 1500 and 800 BC.
Well, Bill, you know, I like to fall back on one of the most lauded people of the 20th century in America as an official on the subject of Jews. That would be Henry Ford, the first book here, an International Jew, who didn't necessarily get the entire message, but he certainly figured out something that I would imagine even Martin Luther, had he lived a little bit longer, would have figured out himself. Right here on page 54 of the first book, first volume, The International Jew, quote, "If the Jews were fully understood by the Gentiles, if the Christian churches, for example, were freed from their delusion that the Jews are Old Testament people, and if the churches really knew what Talmudic religion is, the misrepresentation would still be stronger." And he goes on to say two paragraphs down, "If the Jews were really Old Testament people," and in quotations it has, "which they are not, if they were really conscious of a mission for the blessing of all nations, the very things in which they offend would automatically disappear." So even Henry Ford, who, like I said, who's lauded around within, you know, Jew-wise, white nationalists, even the anti-Zionist movements, states right there, this is only two quotes in the very first chapter of his book.
Really?
Where he specifically calls out several times that the Jews are not Old Testament people.
And he doesn't have to know the history, does he? I mean, he just knows it.
Well, he starts out with the whole beginning of the book saying this is a war between Anglo-Saxons and Jews. And he doesn't figure out, sees the Satan, sees the Yahweh. That message is not there, but he certainly figures out, just like I said, if you read the Martin Luther's The Jews and Their Lies, chronologically the writings in there, or if you go back and read some of his older writings, you know, before he wrote The Jews and Their Lies, and look
at... I've elucidated, you know, on the program with Brian early on in those first few segments, we proved that Adolf Hitler knew that the Genesis 3, the Old Testament people, were Aryan people, that the Aryan man was the epitome of the creation of God, that the Jews were usurpers. Hitler knew all this, and he may not have known the historical details, but he just knew it.
You know, that reminds me, now that we bring up these two quotes, I forgot to mention early on, Bill, I got you a commercial video for your website that I produced today. It took me about 6 hours to put together. It really...
Wow, great.
Super fancy, but that you bring up the Adolf thing, and one of the things right here that I like to quote from him as well is, he quotes, "Jesus was of Celtic ancestry on the grounds that, quote, Galilee was a colony where the Romans had installed Gaelic legionaries, and it's certain that Jesus was not a Jew," unquote.
Well, right. They knew Jesus wasn't a Jew, and they were looking for reasons how that was possible. But the bottom line is that the Jews are not the Israelites. That's the thing. And you know, let me say, and this is for John's sake, that, you know, Diodorus Siculus, he wrote up until about 50 B.C., So he has no care for Christianity at all because he was dead for 80 years before the crucifixion. And he quoted from I think Menander of Ephesus, and he tells this story about the Exodus, and it's in Book 36 of the Library of History. I quote it on my site. I quote it in my historical papers at length. And he has no problem. And he's a Greek, Theodorus Siculus, and a very proud Greek at that. And he has no problem saying that, you know, when the strangers in Egypt, and he gives the Egyptian version, you know, which is going to be politically corrected for Egypt, you know, from an Egyptian viewpoint, because that's, you know, Menander's given the Egyptian version. And he has no problem saying that when the strangers were cast out of Egypt, which is the Egyptian version of the Exodus, that many of them left by sea, and they founded many of the cities in Greece and in diverse other places. And I'm paraphrasing, but you'll find it's very accurate. And the greater part left with Moses. That's what he says. And he's a Greek, and he has no problem thinking that these Greek cities were founded by Hebrews. So if we put ourselves in Diodorus's shoes, the Hebrews have to be white. They can't be Jews. They can't be Jews at all. Well, and we know that the Jews aren't white. Just look at them.
Well, yeah, we can tell. I mean, you can't tell in some cases because there's been some mixing there.
Well, of course there's been mixing. But there's no doubt in my mind that Diodorus Siculus saw these Hebrews as white people that founded some of these cities in Greece.
Okay, assuming he's right. But let me get to some parts of the Bible here. Psalm 2, for instance. Now, there it says...
I'm sorry. Even if Diodorus is wrong, he still saw the Hebrews as white people.
Okay.
Yeah, there ain't no brown Greeks, not at that time. There might be today because of the Turkish invasion. I mean, the Turks held Greece for 500 years, but if you look at all the artwork of the Byzantine culture, there ain't no brown Greeks. And if you look at all of the writing, I mean, I've read Homer, I've read Herodotus, I've read Aeschylus, Euripides. I could go on for 10 minutes. But basically, the Greeks were blonde. They weren't all blonde. They weren't all yellow-haired, but they were blonde. They were fair, period. There were brown Greeks.
Well, yeah, you look at the old frescoes of Alexander the Great. He was definitely blonde.
Exactly. And all the Greeks, they always described themselves as blonde and fair, yellow-haired and fair, red-haired and fair, always.
Yeah, too bad that's not today. Anyway, but in Psalm 2 of the Bible, it says that the nations are but a drop and accounted as a small dust in the balance. Now, why would it have that view when talking about the Messiah coming and what is it, hammering the nations with a scepter of iron?
Well, it's the context, the cultural context of that word. The other nations in the biblical Old Testament viewpoint were all white. They were all I got a paper on my website, The Race of Genesis 10. That is the beginning of our race. They were all white. The original Ethiopians, the original Egyptians, the original Assyrians, the original Sumerians, the original Persians. And in fact, the Greeks described the Persians as being ivory-skinned white. The Greeks said that the Persians were too white because they never took their robes off in public, where the Greeks were accustomed to working and fighting out in the sun naked. And the Persians and the Medes, they were all white. And it's in that context that word nations is used in the Old Testament. Those other nations that the God of the Old Testament, Yahweh, only chose the one branch of the race as opposed to all the other branches.
You know, if you go into your internet, the fellow that's asking a question, I think his name is John, and you type in Caucasian mummies in China, you'll find out that...
Well, they're actually, you know, the Tibetan culture is almost certainly Aryan in its origin.
That's blue-eyed blonde.
They mixed with Mongols, and that's what they look like they do now. But you'll find that I believe those mummies that people love to talk about, they are almost surely Scythians and probably don't date much before 400 or 500 BC.
They go back 20.
The Tartarian mummies, the
Tartarian mummies.
But they go back 2,700 years, which is right during the time of the dispersion of Israel.
Well, you know, I'd like to say that I've read a lot of archaeology books, and I haven't read everything, but, you know, I have never seen a dating for them by professional archaeologists that goes back that far.
Well, I was just reading it. Eli has the thing on there on what I was just sharing with you. But it goes back that far, and it was talking about, you know, these mummies, and then you go back to the time of Israel's dispersion, it fits right in that time. And then when you go into, like Eli says, that they were talking about Buddha come out of the white man or Israelites, we want to talk about Buddha. At that time, weren't we doing Baal worship, and that's why we're dispersed? And then they end up in China. There was no Chinamans, as we understand Chinamans today, just them. And all of a sudden, they were practicing Baal worship at that particular time. So,
well, yeah, it was definitely the spread of the Saka that caused a lot of those religions to appear in Asia at that time. There's no doubt.
No, that'd be
no
an
doubt
interesting
in my mind.
Study for you,
I
and
mean,
Eli to get on.
Buddhism is, well, I'm at odds with Eli for having on that topic, for having that woman, that freak on his show. I mean, Susan Olsen's a straight freak.
Well, she just brought up information that he wanted. That's
well,
all.
Well, there's no doubt that that Buddha was a Saxon, and I would cite George Moore. George Moore wrote that in 1860, and I read the book, and I got a copy of it on my website somewhere. That, you know, from Google Books, George Moore, The Lost Tribes and the Saxons of the East and the Saxons of the West. But you know, Susan, that Moses is buried in India. Get the hell out of here. That's some kike wanted to make a tourist attraction. They took an old tomb and they called it Moses' tomb. And these clowns fall for it. It's ridiculous to think that people that died in Palestine were taken 1,500 miles east through the hostile Kushite Empire, the first Babylonian Empire, and buried in India. That's just ridiculous.
Well, Moses died... Right.
And Columbus discovered America, and
he was with Columbus, the Jew, the Murano.
Well, some kike, you know, took a maybe in the third or fourth or fifth centuries, you know, sometime in the post-Christian era when the Krishna story was invented, some kike took some old burial grounds and they put Moses' name on one and Mary's name on another and Jesus' name on another and probably soaked some Christians for some tourist dollars. That's the way I look at that.
My understanding was Mary died in England. I don't know. That's what I've heard. You probably know more about that than I do. I know that Jesus supposedly...
I don't buy that story either, I'm sorry.
I don't know where she died at.
Well, there's, yeah, you know, a lot of the early British Israel Christians tried to tell the story about the Jews putting Mary and Joseph of Arimathea in a rowboat, and somehow they ended up in Britain. And it's a nice story for school children in maybe 10th century Liverpool, but it doesn't wash. It's not historical. It's just a fairy tale. If you can't show it to me in an old book, it's a fairy tale. I'm sorry. Or if you can't dig it out of the ground, it's a fairy tale. I don't want to hear it.
Okay, Mr. Fink, how would you respond to a man like Alex Minder or...
I have no idea. Yeah, you know, I stay pretty isolated from most of those people. I don't know what Alex Minder says. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he says he's read into the CI stuff. And he thinks,
well, I would say he's a clown because I could show you... I mean, go read the... there's 13 historical papers on my website. It's the menu group in the upper left of Christogenia, and it's German origins, Scythian origins, the Trojans, the Danon and Dorian Greeks. I would just ask you to look at that stuff, and then if you want to challenge that, fine with me. But I mean, I pull all my citations out of old books.
it'd be interesting to have him on your show, and you can duke it out.
Yeah, I'll debate with him. I'll debate with any of those clowns.
Hey, Bill.
He better have done his homework. He better have read Herodotus and Strabo and Euripides.
Bill, can I,
yes.
can I ask a question? I don't know who it was that came on, and his shovel needs to be hosed down with a power hose. Maybe I could address that. I'm not sure if he's my brother or what. He's still on the line?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, after I'd had my little rant earlier, and someone piped in, he said he came come in on the call, and he had he needed to pop in or, you know, get on in there because he
well, well, contention is fleshly, and you should just let it go and let it roll off your back, eh?
Yeah, obviously I must have the wrong family, so thanks anyways, you know. I mean, really, I seem to run into a real patriarchal attitude. And then I hear him rant. It seemed like the same voice I
well,
heard.
Well, I just said contention
well, listen,
is fleshly.
Well, listen, you know, Bill, listen,
and,
I'm going to say it because it's rude and it's an arrogant, stiff-necked attitude towards women. And I've had to fight all alone a lot of my life,
I don't think he was picking on you
Bill.
Because you're a woman.
Pardon me?
I don't think he was picking on you because you're a woman.
Well, then he went off on his rant. And it's like, you know what? What is this about the moat and the splinter? And then he goes, we need to fight this. You know, I have beat on every door, city council, sheriff, so on and so forth. And it's like, oh, we need white people to be fighters. And I'm out here in Southern California trying to. You come on with some, you know, cocky attitude that somehow, you know.
Well, right, but I just
you know,
said that contention
so I'm done.
Especially.
You know, it's really a patriarchal attitude. I've tried to come in with a real open heart, already with being battle wounds from the world. And I come into the family that somehow people are better than other people, and I just think it's very rude. I think it's very dishonorable and disrespectful, and if that's how you treat Jesus, I think we'll be a long time down here before he comes back because the way we disrespect one another. Who are you to judge me because I have a strong personality? It'll be a damn good thing that somebody does out here. Okay?
Well, we don't
thanks
know
a
that.
Lot.
Sister, I want to tell you something. It's, even in family, you know, when I grew up with, you know, there was five of us, brothers and sisters, you know, as we understand it today, we argued with each other. And my brother and I would even get into a fisticuffs every now and then, but being that we didn't love each other. So it's the same thing here. You got disagreements, you got some battles go on, and you just got to remember you got some brothers and sisters here that don't agree on everything, or they think they got it going on or whatever. And they do act rude sometimes. But that's where we, as a brother and a sister, have to come in with forgiveness to that brother that you're speaking of, you know, and pray for him. You know, that's what we have to do. We pray for him. And then what happens, God heals us from that damage that was done by that brother to your sister. So I thought I'd just share that with you.
I think she hung up.
Yeah, she hung up.
Well, just like Bill knows, there's interlopers that get in here, and he can, if you're saying something you're not supposed to be saying, or you're one of the scumbags, he'll get you off of there. Or whoever's running, you know, whoever's program, you can get rid of people off it that disruptors.
You know, let me just say something to Winky. She might still be listening, but
I hope she is. She seems like a boy. I love the hell out of her. I don't even know her, but maybe she just gets hurt too easy or something.
Well, you know, that's look, you have to expect that when you're involved in, let's say, politics or religion or whatever conversation you talk about, a controversial subject, people are going to be rude. And you can't help, and that can't be helped. You just, like Mr. Fink says, you have to let it roll off your back. It's not
yep.
And even though that person is nominally on your side, it's not necessarily they're going to always going to like you or like what you have to say. And so, particularly if you're very, she was very zealous, and that doesn't rub too well with a lot of people, you know. And that's she has to expect that.
Oh, believe me, I'm right in the. I know exactly what she's dealing with. I deal with it every day. Hey, we are in the minority. We are all of Us guys are in a minority, including the lady. That's for damn sure.
There aren't many women in our move, and I can certainly appreciate what she's doing. You know, I'm the first guy I'd like to meet her. You know, she didn't live too far from me.
Oh, me too. I told her the same thing.
You know, and some of us guys get together and have a little powwow. You know, we used to be able to do that up here in Escondido. Some come down from up north, and we'd put together a little powwow, you know, and just really enjoy each other. And she's in tough, and I think that we have to, as men, learn to be gentlemen. And sometimes we step, you know, out beyond that. That hurts, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't hurt. It's the fact that, you have been pushing this feminization of men and putting women on this extremely high pedestal above us. You know, this is what they basically brainwashed us, is to bow down or think with our little man down in our pants. And so, therefore, you have, you know, any woman could come around. The women is a very, very, the most powerful tool that these Jews have used against us. You know, that's why pornography is a multi-billion-dollar business, even above drugs, is because prostitutes of men is a woman.
Well, you look at the woman for a minute. You know, and I can understand what you're saying, and I know exactly what you're saying, but you go to the Garden of Eden. The first person that was picked on was the weak link, and that was the woman.
Well, that's what Mike's trying to say.
Exactly.
And we understand that, and that's exactly what the enemy will always use, but this woman was not our enemy. You know, she's with us.
She sounds like she's a sister to me.
Yeah, and... that's why
I love it.
We got to be a little bit gentle with ladies such as her. I can call her a lady. I heard her, you know. And she's right there with us, and she's saying, "I'm ready to go to battle with you guys." And
well,
I hope she gets together with Barbara. I hope they get together because they both got a lot in common.
Gotta have more tough women around like that.
Wife. Has anybody ever, John, you've seen my wife. My wife was on a program with Maui, Patricia, and who else? Was that Wendy?
I remember that program. I listened to part of that program.
Yeah, if a woman is in her place and doing the work that she's supposed to do, I have the highest respect and regard for her.
Oh, you gotta watch out how you say that, Mike.
No, I know. I know a woman's place is second in a family. There is a hierarchy within a family unit and within this, in the sexual genders as well. I've seen explicitly how the Jews throughout history have used women to destroy us because they are a weaker-minded breed. And I, you know, call me a sexist all you want. My wife's sitting right here. She knows exactly where I am.
No, you're absolutely right. There's no doubt women have most often been manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
And as a king of my family or as a man, I will never bow down to the susceptibility of a woman unless I see truly that she is of precise, genuine character.
If I remember correct, I think I read that a long time ago in the Nicene Fathers. I saw something about in there. I wished I could find it again. It was on a page 100 and something. I think I had three or four anti-Nicene fathers, and one of them said something about you should never let a woman overrule you or rule you or whatever a man.
Exactly. I think this is one of the strongest tools in society. If you ever look at the commercials they put on TV, what do you always see? You see the sophisticated business type woman and the fat, stupid white man sitting on a couch watching sports. This is the mentality. This is why the good men.
I don't have a cultural context for that because I haven't watched TV since.
But you're not missing anything. You're not missing anything, and you already know that. You're missing the dirt. But this is what the people out there that are being fed this, you know, are, and the women too, that this replacement of role, you know, it's almost like the feminization of homosexuality, the perversion of a sexual hierarchy, or sexual orientation hierarchy. I'm trying to put a proper term to it, but the man always has to be the leader, and when we become susceptible to a lust, that's when you lose the game immediately. You're down the tubes because a woman will always lead you down the wrong path. Always.
I think what we're starting to do is this lady, though, you know, as I sat here and I listened to everybody and I listened to her, she wasn't out of line anyway. She wasn't trying to stomp on anybody's feet. And that, and what I'm saying is when you find a lady, you know, give her due respect as a lady. And I can understand all of what you guys are saying because I agree with all of that. You know, when you talk about television, for instance, you'll see a blue-eyed blonde. You know, it's amazing. If you see a Mexican, he's always with a Mexican woman. You see a black, he's with a black woman. You see a Chinaman, he's with a Chinese woman. You see a blue-eyed blonde, she's with a dark, big, tall Jew. Never do you see a blue-eyed blonde woman with a blue-eyed blonde guy. Don't happen on TV or movies or anything. And I don't watch that much TV. I watch sports. That's about it. But you know what?
Touch that. You know, that's a good thing. I'm blessed with and praise Yahweh that I never had an interest in spectator sports. Never.
Amen.
You know, when I grew up and everybody I grew up with, you know, used to. You know, I grew up in Packerland. You know how hardcore Packer fans are, the cheeseheads. And I grew up in Wisconsin where that was the religion in Wisconsin, Packer. I always despised watching, not necessarily just monkeys run around in the field for millions of dollars, but just the fact that people would sit around, get drunk, act stupid, and praise over one team fighting the other when their owners were the same. It didn't make sense to me, you know, and it just...
Stupid
boy.
I like watching ice skating. That's a sport.
But there's obviously spectator sports aren't all bad. I just was never accustomed to being attracted to it. And I'm knocking it as all Jew filth. You know, certainly, you need to read this Henry Ford book, The International Jew. He gets into it later on in the 13th and 14th chapter of how they corrupted baseball and wrestling was a big fraud and, you know, how they basically played sports, you know, this big, it's like the big churches you see with the big fancy lights and the big screens and televangelism. They're the same way sports is. Sports, if you're going to spectate it, usually you would go to a ball game with the family and, you know, that was how it was. It wasn't a bunch of million-dollar players and, you know, this garbage going on. The same reason it wasn't the military going to fight for their country and now they're going to fight for these so-called scholarship loans and this money they're getting paid. Nobody in the military fights for their country now. They fight for the paycheck they're getting, for the most part. But you know, to getting back to on point with AKA Christian, I'm not going to get. I'm going to stay very reserved on some issues with that. But there was one point that was pointed out to today. Somebody let me know because I haven't had internet for weeks and. So when I do get on the internet, I basically check my email and I'm done. But there was a comment left by her on my TalkShoe page, which my account on TalkShoe is 16999, that there was nukes. Obviously, if anybody knows the research I've done, I know 9/11 like the back of my hand. I know 9/11 like Fink knows CI. Okay, and I'm arrogantly saying that because I have done the time and the research, the traveling, the money expenditure, and I've also made a film. And it's not I'm trying to stand on a pedestal about it. It's just that I have spent the time doing so, and I'm proud of it. And she comes in and leaves this huge comment. And, you know, she's, what, 3 weeks into CI? And she comes in and leaves this comment. After I went through this whole stuff with Frenchman, and I don't know if you guys heard the show where I had Ashton Fink, Sword Brother, and Frenchman on, and I made it a point to point out to other members of CI and anybody else that wanted to listen that Jews have purposely come into ranks of other theories like 9/11 or Holocaust or JFK or even CI and have tried to instill that poison. It's like I've read an article called Rat Poison. You don't kill a rat by giving it just poison. You give it 90% food and put a little bit of poison in it. What the end result is you kill the rat. Well, that's a bad analogy because we're not rats, but at the same time, that's what the analogy I like to use so that people understand it. And this is what's happening with my expertise is on 9/11, is that you're coming in with this nuke theory, this no plane theory, this other theory. And she writes this big, bold comment on my TalkShoe page, oh, there was nukes in the basement after I spent 3 hours absolutely destroying Frenchmen. You know, Fink and Swordbrother were on there as well. I mean, this was a manslaughter. And people listen to the show said they would hurt to listen to this after 15 minutes because this guy was destroyed in his evidence. He promoted nothing but Jewish people promoting different 9/11 theories instead of even getting to who, but how, and all these different theories. And then she comes in, what, 3 weeks in the CI, and it goes on these emotional tirades like she's really genuine in this, and I hope she is. I really hope she's genuine and misguided. But, you know, she's promoting people like Deagle. John is on the line with us. He's very well informed of 9/11. As a matter of fact, me and him have come along the same path. We've known each other for 3 years now. He comes along the same path and information as I do, except for the CI issue. But at the same time, we've seen, John knows as well in the 9/11 movements, that there is so much Jewish investment and disinfo spilled into that, way more than the Holocaust, way more than the Bolshevik Revolution, way more than any other topic, because 9/11 right now is still the key issue for resulting in these wars, the banking crisis, even immigration, everything else right now that's going on is stemmed from the Jewish orchestration and masterminding of 9/11. And when these people come in, they have these monies invested, you know, the Alex Jones, the Dave Von Kleist, the 911truth.org, 911blogger.com, numerous websites and pages out there that dealt with this. And it took me over 2 years to finally see through the web, which is, thank goodness, I came and finally ran into the CI message, because it made all sense to me then. But she's coming in now with this very, very bold, you know, as a matter of fact, she made a comment on my TalkShoe account. Everything was in caps. There was nukes in the basement after I destroyed this Frenchman guy for over 2 hours. I mean, we bent him over and did everything you possibly could with this dude and what he was trying to push.
He hasn't been back since either. I haven't seen him at all.
Oh, and then all of a sudden, AKA Christian pops up, and she's brand new, and she comes in a woman fashion, because that's where, you know, weakness will prey. Now, I'm not saying that this is the agenda of what might be happening, but I'm looking at it as a serious threat, because I'm looking at someone that's, first of all, pushing a Jew, Dr. Bill Deagle, which he is, and then pushing this Jew theory, which I know. And if you listen to the show, I just railed Frenchman for pushing every single Jew website he could, and then going, but it's good info. It's good information. No, it's not. It's Jews. What do you not understand? They're liars, thieves, and murderers, just like John 8:44 said. So it's like I see her coming in out of the woodwork and appealing to men who might be a little susceptible to a female and coming in an emotional tirade, really pulling on the heartstrings of more of your susceptible men to that. And I'm not. I'm one of the most strongest men when it comes to women. As a matter of fact, I'm outright very strong. I'm not going to get into that, but so this is where I'm not throwing her to the wind. I hope she's genuine. I really do, and I hope she's really into the CI message as much as she emotionally goes in a tirade and claims she is. But
well, right, and you know, before you came tonight, let me interview. Before you came tonight, I had a conversation with her, and I asked her about you know, how she picked this message up so quickly, and she is only in it a few weeks, but she's been around. You know, she went around the whole circuit like most other people did that have found CI. She, you know, she was listening to Republic Radio and things like that for a long time. But well, let me say that she sounded sincere and it was a good conversation. But if she comes into this from a level where she pretends to have a great knowledge about many issues and she's only repeating it from Jewish sources, she shouldn't come into this. She should come into this with the approach of inquiry. She should come into it from that approach. I mean, humble inquiry. And I would say the same thing to a guy. You don't come into CI. You don't come into a group like, especially a group like ours, where most people are well read in the topics that they present and discuss. You don't come into it like you know more than the people that you're coming to, because you're going to get slapped down. And being a woman has absolutely nothing to do with it. Being a woman has absolutely nothing to do with it. That's just ridiculous.
And Bill, this is exactly why I come in and I claim to everybody. I tell everybody. I said, look, when it comes to CI, I'm a student. I am a student. I don't. That's why I don't do my own talk shows and start getting into the CI message. I don't even try to preach it to the public because I'm not well versed in it, and I'm still learning as a student. And when I get comfortable with the message, I might start speaking on it. And hopefully that I'll come to that point, you know, fairly soon. But yeah, I come in wanting to learn, you know, wanting to hear what you
well,
know.
Well, right. That's the right attitude, and that's the attitude we should all have. I would not go run my mouth about 9/11. I mean, I got involved with the freshman debate, but only from a point where I wanted him to convince me, who you know, since I don't know, that I should investigate the things that he was presenting, and he couldn't do that. He couldn't convince me that I should take any of my time to look deeper into any of the things that he was saying, because he had none of the facts at hand. And that was my own approach with him. And you know, you could take it from the viewpoint you come from, which is much more knowledgeable than my own in that area. But if she's coming into identity, she should come in with a humble mind and a humble heart and inquire. And if she wants to confront you about the information that you're putting out on your program about 9/11, she shouldn't try to slap you with what might be, you know, in her mind, a greater knowledge. She should ask. She should approach you and ask. And I'm sure that you would handle an honest question honestly.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, and I still will at this point if she has questions. But, I mean, you can just, like I said, you can go to my talk show account, 16999, and see the comments she left under Winky to me or whatever it was. And, you know, it was Sword Brethren actually pointed me out today because I don't keep up on comments and a lot of stuff going on with the lack of internet I have. And he was like, yeah, this is all in caps. You know, it's like, it was Nukes in the Basement. And I'll tell you this, and it was Dr. Beagle that'll show you this. And Dr. Beagle's a Jew. So I'm thinking, man, I just got rid of Frenchman out of here with his BS trying to corrupt and poison the well. And now somebody else comes in with this Nuke message, you know, after I explicitly did a 3-hour show, and Bill, you're absolutely right. You took you didn't take my side at all in the show. You came out from a third party, unbiased role. Like, well, let me see what you got to offer. Let me see what you got to offer. And it was clear to you where it was going, you know. And John, didn't you listen to that show as well?
This one was with. I believe I did. Which show was it, Mike?
It was I had Bob Ashton on with me and Fink, and then Sword Brethren came in later. It was that Frenchman guy that was perpetrating no planes and nukes, and you know, it was the whole the really 9/11. I like to call it the Annihilation Show because it was so bad.
Do you have a website on that 9/11 that you've done?
911missinglinks.com.
Okay, honey, write that down. 911missinglinks.com.
As a matter,
I believe you can't if you have nukes in the basement, then how then building is going to go free fall?
Well, you got to listen to the interview. It's because if that nuke theory ever comes to you and you listen to this interview, you'll have a very good understanding. Well, first you got to watch 911missinglinks.com. Watch that film and know this. I put together a 2-hour film. I had 5 hours of evidence I could have put in film. There's a lot of stuff on there I missed. Matter of fact, if I could get a minute, I want to play this audio clip actually that John on the phone sent me. John, you know that audio clip of the fireman talking about on the radio about the bomb? You know what I'm talking about? That when he's
now that was
the radio.
Play it.
All right, for you. Hold on.
I mean, all we got is time, right? I mean, play it.
All right, you know, I'm gonna play it for you guys real quick here. Let me find it.
This is usually a 5-hour program.
The war behind closed doors and present to creation. Okay, that was the let's see, under radio shows. All right, here it goes.
Hey, the mobile command vehicle. All right, listen, you got to help me out. I have a report of a gas leak in Stuyvesant High School across the street from the Trade Center. If there's any unit that can go over there and check it out, that would be good. If not, I'll send another unit.
All right, stand by. I'll see if I can get somebody for you.
All right, thanks, Will. Is there any unit in relocating to Lower Manhattan in the 1st Battalion that's out of here right now?
1135, I think, a lot of fives, okay?
Negative. Other units that... Unit acting engine 6.
Acting engine 6.
What unit in 6?
Engine 321.
321 acting 6. Go over to Stuyvesant High School. Check out a gas leak.
So, what's its location?
So, opposite the World Trade Center.
Half one. 83 Manhattan. 83 Manhattan.
All units stand by. 321 acting 6. We're going to get you a box. Go in by yourself. The Stuyvesant in high school. It's on West Street. The school's been evacuated.
10-4.
Units stand by in the session, please. All units stand by.
Over the FDR, no left, and Brooklyn Bridge.
It's clear, no pedestrians right now.
Command Zero, is Detective Rooney on the air?
On the air.
Yeah, Mike, is there any ATF agents with you down there?
Speaking of Sergeant, I'm heading over to a zero. All the ATF agents went somewhere else. They were meeting down by one of the hotels.
Yeah, I want to let them know about Clara. Were you able to make that notification?
Sure, notifications will be in May.
Thanks, Mike.
Location, Sarge.
On Barclay and Church.
Oh, head over towards you now.
It's just been out of the cloud, all right? There's numerous fires and debris falling from other buildings.
I made it.
Hey, boy, is on here.
Is there any transmissions for New York City? Please go through the East Coast City.
ELC from Command Post.
Go.
You better advise that Inspector Chikor is going to respond to Church MD at the New York City Command Post. Copy.
Well,
Supervisor Stark now. It's just so much. He's having fun now. Trust me. What's your location?
I think training is just maybe Air Force personnel to start securing this. People are starting to watch.
Midfield to me on air.
The plane starts on air. Explosives on King and 6th Avenue. Pull out 6th Avenue to say. Ready to put the car. Explosives again. One of those remote control planes filled with explosives.
Michael 15, you on? Anybody advise us?
10 stations, operator.
Bobby. Here's where it gets good. Listen to this.
Get an update on the plane. Spencer, I got a message on that plane. It's a big truck with a mural painted of an airplane diving into New York City and exploding. No, what's in the truck. The truck is in between 6th and 7th on King Street.
All right, Spencer, I'll send the issue to the bomb squad. They're full liftgate.
You caught that last message?
That's fine.
With a mural painted, airplane diving into New York, blowing up. Two men got out of the truck, ran away from it. We got those two boys on the...
That's good.
John can explain that a little bit better.
Yeah, just in simple terms, tell us what that's all about.
Okay, there was apparently an incident that happened on King Street in Manhattan. It was between 6th Avenue and Varick Street, but the police officers on the said it was 7th Avenue, which Varick Street is 7th Avenue. It just turns into 7th about two blocks north of that. So it was actually between 6th and Varick Street. Now, that incident... apparently, these two officers came upon a truck that, and this must have been after the events that happened on 9/11 when the plane struck the towers. Otherwise, they would not have thought this truck was suspicious. This truck, you know, just as the officer said, had a mural painting of an airplane diving into New York City and exploding. And that, of course, you know, during 9/11, that roused their suspicion.
Yes.
Right. So they were approaching the vehicle, and apparently these two guys jumped out of it and ran away from it. They caught up to them, probably them and maybe a couple of other officers, and they captured these two guys, after which the van itself exploded. And so there goes the evidence. Now they requested the bomb squad and ESU to the scene. Now, ESU is the Emergency Services Unit. I'm sure, and if you've been in New York City, you know what they are. These are the guys who, like, carry the heavy weapons and stuff. But they also said, you know, 10-5 about the plane, 10-5. 10-5 is code for repeat. They want to repeat the message about the officers about that mysterious remote control plane. Apparently, this mural painting looked like a remote control plane, and the other officers who overheard this wanted them to repeat it so they can understand what was going on with the situation. Now, we never heard about this in the media. They never once reported it, and yet that would have been absolute proof that whoever these two guys they captured were involved with 9/11.
Yeah.
And I'm absolutely certain they must have been Mossad.
Oh, hell yeah. I would believe in a minute. And the whole thing was buried.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I never heard nothing about that. I mean, it wasn't out there.
Well, you have the police transmissions. That's proof enough.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They were, I could tell that was a real police transmission. They were all equal opportunity cops, most of them.
I'm sure all of us at one time or another... You hear something like one little quip on the news, and you never hear it again.
I grew up in Jersey City, John. That's where
I know. I know that, Mr. Venga. And
yeah, you can just call me Bill.
Okay, Bill. Yeah, that was something. That's proof enough that just something screwy was going on with 9/11, and that just that one incident is just, you know, why would they cover something so significant like that up? And
right.
None of the police officers, none of those police officers came forward, or maybe they were, couldn't come forward and tell their story.
Well, they like those pensions. I mean, those pensions are pretty sweet. Yeah, you know, that's a big big banana hanging out there that they'll take away in a minute. They can't.
Well, not only that, but you figure a lot of these cops might not have an idea of the bigger picture going on and how significant that was. You know, it was like the New Jersey North Bergen police in New Jersey that caught the Mossad van up there. You know, they probably didn't have a reality of what they were dealing with, how big this conspiracy was. But this just goes to show right here is, well, first of all, Fox News reports that all these people that were caught on 9/11 were military intelligence or controlled demolition experts. And then you got all these guys riding around with these vans. Now, these vans were part of a company called Urban Moving Systems. Urban Moving Systems was giving a federal grant just months before 9/11 of $500,000. This federal grant. You can go on fedspending.com and look up Urban Moving Systems. You'll see a $497,000 grant by the federal government. So I can imagine what G was behind giving them the grant to start up this front company, which is basically the company that was going in and out of the trade towers. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't been able to dig this back up, and John, you might know this, but didn't Bolin have the evidence showing that Urban Moving Systems was going in and out of the trade towers before 9/11?
It's been a while since I've actually studied that, so I can't say for sure, but he definitely, I remember reading something about that recently.
Yeah, it was, there's so much evidence, you know, that, 9/11 was done by Jews. And there's a very specific amount of evidence of how they did it, too, which isn't important as who. And again, going back to, well, Fink, what was the, or Bill, sorry, what was the Cass thing you were just talking about with Sword Brethren last night, where they said they were going to inject alternative conspiracy theories to combat?
Yeah, the protocols, learned Elders of Zion. Oh, that was actually that Cass Sunstein crap clown.
Yeah.
He was a Jew at, well, he's still a Jew. He was at Harvard Law. He's a professor at Harvard Law that, he's on the Obama, you know, staff now, and he's all for injecting right-wing conspiracies with false conspiracies and undermining them. Yeah, but, you know, there's an Operation COINTELPRO. And that dates back maybe to the 60s or the 50s even, that it is famous for undermining groups that are perceived to be threats to the government, and including, you know, groups like Identity or the Nation of Islam or whatever, and just splintering them and separating them to ensure that those groups aren't effective. That's why they do it.
Now, on the other side of the coin, which is kind of funny because the Alex Jones Patriots hard crowd calls me COINTELPRO think, but because I looked into this COINTELPRO operation, and they were not only targeting right-wing, basically white movements, but they were also targeting the left-wing communist movements as well.
Yeah, anything that's going to upset the apple cart. And I had asked Brian about that last night. I asked Sword Brethren about that last night. You know, because I didn't know if they ever, you know, infiltrated any left-wing movements. But, you know, there's a point, you know, the left wing, a lot of the extreme left wing thinks a lot more like we do than the centrists.
Exactly.
You know, the left and the right come together at a certain point. They're anti-globalist. They're anti-corporate. Yeah, you know, and that upsets their little capitalist apple cart as much as we do.
Yeah, they definitely have a lot of similarities. Well, it's like the similarities between fascism and communism. You know, you have a lot of the similarities that sell the story, but when it comes down to it, there's very core components there that are very different.
Right.
You know, like with for instance, capitalism, or not capitalism, communism and fascism, you have a big difference in nationalism and internationalism.
Well, yeah, Hitler said that Marxism is the eternal tearing apart of the nation, and that's something that they could not tolerate.
Absolutely.
You know, let me just mention one more thing about an incident on King Street. This van, people would ask the question, because they would be incredulous. I said, why would somebody put, you know, give away what operation there was and put painted on their truck? Mike, maybe you can answer that.
Ah, well, that's quite funny because I'm actually working on a video with that exact audio of how they bragged in the movie with Ben Stiller. The movie was called Duplex. Ben Stiller and Drew Barrymore. They were the pretext of the movie is, you know, it's this romantic comedy where they're going to buy a house in Brooklyn. And the moving van that comes and pulls up in front of the house of their
wow.
that they're buying, you know, this is a comedy, was this totally Jewish moving van truck, which is, what was it, Taking You to the Homeland or something? It was the total epitome of what was going on 9/11. It was like they were bragging about
they
this
They do.
Stuff.
It's like, it's uncanny quite often that they actually love to boast about what they're going to do to us.
Absolutely. They're
arrogant. Kiss us off in advance.
You know, it's so, like all these movies, they've there was a flick, now it came from more of your Patriot's Heart, Illuminati kind of conspiracy theorist, but he showed all the clips of all these different Hollywood movies that before 9/11 happened showed the numbers 9/11 in it. And it was like all these bragging rights of Hollywood that 9/11 was going to happen, including the birth date in the movie Matrix of Neo, the sign on the wall of some other movie. It was like just tons of movies. It was the number 9/11 came up over and over and over again. And so, you know, it's kind of like they're bragging. I mean, they went as far out to make a show. John, what was the show that they made where they ended up pulling it from broadcasting it? But they was about flying jets into the trade towers. They ended up rescuing the jets at the end. Oh, what was the show?
That was the they only made that just like 6 months before 9/11.
Yeah, exactly.
That was just that show was called an offshoot of what was it called? The Lone Gunman. That's what it was called.
The Lone Gunman.
Right.
Yeah. And about flying into the passenger jets into the trade towers.
Oh yeah, and it was the exact scenario almost. And
yeah,
and if you also look at a movie before that, there was several years with Kurt Russell and what's her name? That actress. The Executive Decision. Them getting a plane and crashing it into Washington. I mean, come on. And Jews run Hollywood. They made these movies. They have a word for it. It's called chutzpah.
Yeah.
We've all heard of that.
It's like we showed in Missing Links that the founder of Mossad was a Shin Bet Mossad, and he was also the ranking member. Back in the 1970s, the towers are very brand new at the time. He had said that, well, terrorists will hit the tallest phallical symbols in New York City. And so they already knew when they were even billing it that far back in the 70s that they were going to use that as a terrorist act, you know. And there's something to be said about George Bush Sr. on 9/11 of 91, exactly 10 years before this incident, where he was talking about we're going to have a new world order. And he said that, you know, within the hour, a decade before the trade towers attacks. You know, not a lot of people reference that, but it's like on 9/11 of 1991, within an hour of 9/11 happening in 2001, George Bush comes on TV and says, I can see the prospect for a new world order, which is new. He's just replaced the N with the J, and you have Jew world order.
Yeah, well, that's what they're aiming for. I mean, that's what the protocols are all about.
Exactly.
They've been plotting for it for thousands of years.
Well, it's like, you know, unless we as whites, there's one reason they want to destroy us, because we're the only ones who will fight back against them, it seems. And now they're in the process of destroying the Arabic peoples and because they're getting, they woke up, I should say wised up to these people. But unfortunately, our generations, the last two or three generations of our people have forgotten. And now that they think that Hitler's such an awful guy, I mean, you know, or whatever, and when he wasn't.
And they believe all the Jew propaganda that Hitler was a Jew, that Hitler was a pagan, that Hitler was this, that Hitler was that.
You know what's funny, Bill? Is if you go back in the archives of my website, I was one of the biggest proponents of selling that. That Hitler was a Rothschild agent and a Jew.
Well, it would all make sense at first.
Yeah.
It would make sense in a lot of ways, but the people that, you know, people defended blindly without even reading what Hitler actually wrote. And once you understand what the Jews had done to Weimar Germany, Hitler is the obvious response to that. And why would they need a Hitler plant in Germany since they already ran it? There's no need. The Hegelian dialect doesn't always work. I'm sorry. There's no need when you already have control of a country to put a plant in it to take it over. They already had it.
Well, you know, the two key factors of turning me around from Hitler was a Jew and a Rothschild agent and all this was, first of all, the fact that there was no evidence that Hitler's grandmother slept with Rothschild as a maid. And all. There, I mean, there was none. And I was looking at the sources, and it was all Jewish sources, and I was going, okay, wait, this is BS. And then, now, mind you, I'm one of the people that was strongest on this Hitler was a Jew theory because I was the guy that remastered Jim Condit's DVD, Final Solution for Adolf Hitler, which was a DVD that he made with a Jewish doctor from Idaho who presented 95% of the evidence that convinced Jim Condit that Hitler was a Jewish agent.
Well, there you have it. And they, all those people that follow that bullshit point to Jim Condit, too.
And I will tell you
cite him right away. Is he some kind of great authority?
Exactly. And I will tell you that I am the guy that not only got to meet Jim Condit and speak with him for hours on end about this issue, but I'm also the guy that remastered Jim Condit's DVD. So I'm very well aware of the evidence that was presented to us about this Hitler was a Jew theory, and it was absolute BS. First of all, his information came from a Jewish source, a doctor that wanted to stay anonymous. Well, go figure. Not only that, but, you know, the biggest point that these, I would like to see the anti-Zionist movement like to use to bash Hitler and Nazism is that Hitler accepted money from the bankers. Now, what they don't mention, and somebody else pointed out to me, it was in the 51 documents of Zionist collaboration, is that, yes, he did accept money from the bankers. Kudos to him, because you know what? He suckered the bankers, because it later stated in the 51 documents of Zionist collaboration that he swindled them and that he never fulfilled none of the orders or the expectations that they wanted of him when he accepted the money. So he was able to use them and sucker the Jew. He Jewed the Jew, which is, you know, it's hard for people to understand that. You know, people don't even comprehend that, you know, someone was able to work the Jew against themselves.
Heil Hitler. So,
you know, this guy was a marvel, really. He was a marvel because he was able to use their money and yeah, I'll follow yours, sure. Let me build up my gig here. And then with his other policies of, you know, National Socialism, he was able to make the country extremely strong. I mean, you take Germany.
That's the key, Mike, is that the Jews want to turn off all nationalists on Hitler, and they want to make sure that Hitler is never investigated, because if we learn what Hitler was all about, we will understand that we can throw off this yoke of the Jew.
Yes.
You know, and a Jew is afraid of that.
And they're definitely afraid of United States being the yoke that will throw them off. This is the bastion that will throw them off. We are in such a great position. And there, like I said, when we go through these shows that I'm going to be doing at Sword Brethren about people in this military that supported Hitler and supported Nazism and didn't want to see the war go on between the U.S. and the Axis of Evil, you'll see that it's just a matter of us being able
to... It was a self-genocidal race. I mean, we destroyed our own race.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 100 million whites killed in World War II. That was the, that's all you got to look at. 100 million, over 100 million whites slaughtered in World War II. It wasn't anybody else. It wasn't even Jews. It wasn't anybody else but whites. So
well,
that
right,
was,
and but a lot of people like to blame Hitler for that, and I would say that blaming Hitler is the fallen for the Jew psychology of blaming the victim.
That's right.
Yeah, never wanted the wars.
But, you know, a Jew would tell a woman if a mandingo's going to rape you, just lay back and enjoy it. That's what a Jew would do. And if a white woman gets raped by a nigger, the Jew wants to blame the white woman. Well, the Jews destroyed Germany, and they want us to blame the victim.
Right.
And it's probably the lowest point in our history and a great source of shame on the part of Britain and America for taking part in that Jewish destruction of Germany, which would have never happened without Britain and America. But we fell for all the Jew propaganda, and we should be ashamed of it. The greatest generation is the greatest generation of frauds. All right.
The dupes of our people.
Well, hence you have Von Braun.
Yes,
you have that was in World War II that, you know, specifically stated he fought on the wrong side. Hence you have Patton who figured out late.
You know, I've told men, I mean, not just since long before I'm in Identity, I've told men that we fought on the wrong side of the war, that we're in that war, and they just wanted to bayonet me. I swear, they do not want to hear that their great sacrifice was evil or that their great sacrifice was wrong. They're incredibly obstinate when it comes to that.
And Bill, hence the rebellion of the Anglo-Saxon.
Absolutely.
Hence the rebellion you see in the Old Testament as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, this is a big misnomer. You know, the Jews are always, their works are always being labeled as the rebellion against Yahweh. When they've never rebelled against Yahweh. They've always just done the work of Satan.
Yeah, they've always been.
Rebellion has been the whites who have sat there and suckered and lain in bed with these Jews and have sold out their identity to the Jews. This is what I try to get through to people about the Old Testament, you know, because they say, oh, they acted like Jews back then. Yeah, well, they're acting like Jews right now. You know, same whites are in bed with Jews. I mean, look at how many whites are Christian Zionists.
All over the place. Exactly.
Yes. It's synonymous with what's going on in the Old Testament.
History's definitely repeated itself.
You know, I'm just looking on this video online now. This is a video. This is a news I never heard of. There was a man named Reinhold Elsner, and he was 75 years old in 1995. And on April 25th of that year, he burned himself alive in front of one of the German buildings.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah, in front of the old Bundestag or something, didn't he? Reichstag,
yeah,
or whatever.
It was a building commemorating German war heroes, and he. You know, he wrote in one of his letters about, you know, 50 years is enough of defamation, 50 years is enough of lies and all everything. I had enough. This man was 25 in 1945, so he must have been in the, he was a Wehrmacht veteran, and he says, I can't stand this anymore. Now I'm 75 years old. Basically, he said, I'm going to show these people this is how a real soldier dies. This is how a real German dies. And I said, I'm going to wait. If I wake up just one person, he said, to the truth of what happened in that war, then it would be worth it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people awake, but, I mean, we have a small voice, you know. It's hard to compete against CNN and Disney.com and FoxNews.com and all the phonies. It really is. The Jews definitely have the prince of the power of the air. That's what they are.
Well, that brings me back to a topic earlier I was speaking on, and not to be hard on my old brethren here, but we need to stop being fearful of these people. There's only one entity to be fearful of, and we know who that is. So you know, I hate to hurt feelings here, but we need to get out there and be fearless to our enemy. You know, there's been great people in the past that have faced these people a lot harder than all of us have, and I just don't see honoring what they've put out there by slacking is going to help us. We have to, and I'm not advocating people to go out there and do something drastic. Certainly not pull a Von Brune. But
yeah, well, there's no point in that, especially when every one of your own brethren are going to be against you. There's no point in that at all.
Yeah. Even his
Babylon own. Has to fall first, then it's our turn. That's a clear message in Scripture.
Yeah.
And that's what it's going to take before they'll wake up, I think, Bill.
Yeah, well, it's going to take a little pain and suffering to wake. It takes pain and suffering to wake people up. Believe me, I know. My wake up came when I got thrown into a cage with 300 screaming monkeys. I mean, that's the way it is.
But you know what? Since things get, I mean, things are ripe right now. Suffering is happening ripe right now, and for us to not be out there and doing and spreading the message right now, I mean, it's basically just going to decay to a point where that message does get spread enough and people do start acting on that message. That's the point. It's not going to be a magical entity, so to speak, that's going to come out and just wake everybody up. It has to be Yahweh's children that are aware of their identity.
Oh, right, and we could never give that up. And I do, you know, I got 18 websites working.
Exactly.
I spam on Craigslist. I spam every chance I get. You know, and that's the mess. I mean, you could lead a horse to water. You can't make him go to your website. I mean, if I could, I would just stand behind him and smack them in the head and make them read my website, you know?
Well, I got, like I said, you know, I was talking to you earlier, Bill, about another strategy we're going to try out here later, and we'll see how that works out.
Let me tell a little story. Yeah, you know, the whole time I was in prison, there were maybe 20, 25 white guys in the unit. Yeah, you know, and 275 niggers and spicks. And the white guys had their own TV room. And I would go in the white guy's TV room once a day. And I would just abuse all the white guys sitting there watching TV. And they really, I was the biggest white boy in the unit, so nobody could fuck with me, right? So I tell them all, you know, why are you sitting here worshiping these niggers? Why are you sitting here worshiping these niggers every day? You complain about the niggers out there, and you're in here worshiping the Monticellos. And they'd all just give me that dumb look, like that deer in the headlights look, that stand there looking stupid. They wouldn't know what to say. But, you know, I do the same thing out here. And we have to do that. And it sounds harsh or whatever, but we have to do it every day. Every time you see your brother going to a nigger movie or a nigger whatever, why are you worshiping those niggers? Why are you giving your money to those Jews? Why are you doing that? That's the biggest. We are the masters of our own destruction. I mean, the Jews want to kill us, but they're just snakes and they act like snakes. And they can't help it being wolves. But we can help it being sheep. Well, we can. We don't have to just give them all our money and say, okay, now you can kill me. You have all my money. I gave it to you. I'm a whore. Just kill me. That's the attitude. I mean, it's incredible. And it's hard to reach people. I understand that. But you have to slap them in the head. I mean, not physically, but at least verbally. Okay, I didn't mean to get on a soapbox or nothing. But
yeah, it's all right. I did it earlier myself, so.
Yeah, that's you're right. We got to wake our brethren up, but we have to find ways to do it. We don't have enough good propaganda. Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not a cartoonist, but we need cartoonists. We need people to
come up with. Hopefully this video I got for you will help. Matter of fact, I might run out and jump on the internet somewhere and get it uploaded so you can see what we're working with here.
Yeah, I'll put it on my sites.
But at the very least, we'll get this video up, and if we want to work with something better, we can do that too. Like, you know, the mother plans we're talking about as well will help bring in some traffic to the people of the message, you know.
I'll put it on YouTube, and I'll put it on wherever I can. That'd be great.
Yeah, it'll already be on YouTube. Don't worry.
We could, six of us could put it on YouTube.
Yeah, that's the better way to do it, and title it different each way.
Yeah.
You know, if you see a new nigger video coming out, or
plus, I got two sites. I got Chris DeGenier and Chris DeGenos. I mean, they're both the same. Basically, they got the same content. Yeah, you know, so that's a way to title it both. You know, both ways.
Well, you know, you were talking about you were on Craigslist earlier, and you know, we had talked about that several times in the past. Here is a great marketing tool for the people that are listening. Could you explain to them how that benefits bringing in new traffic? Granted, even if it's 0.001% of the people that come and be aware, you're multiplying that much more.
Yeah,
so,
right. What I do is I put that globe up on my site. Yeah, I put the globe. I scroll up so that I can see the globe on my site. And we got these multiple tab browsers now. So I go in one tab on Craigslist, and I spam the religious forum, and I really make, like, smart-ass barbed remarks. I look for something I could make a smart-ass barbed response to. And when I see it, I make a response, and I'll put my site name in there, too. You know, my URL on Craigslist, right in with the response. And I'll post it, and I'll just go look at the window where the globe is, and I'll see, like, six flags pop up. You know, like six people go check out my site. And most of them don't stay long, but at least they look. You know what I mean? And I do that like two or three times a week. And that's probably not often enough, but it's all I got time to do. I'll sit on Craigslist for like 15 minutes. I'll make five, six, eight posts. And I catch a lot of shit from especially from San Francisco, from that area. And I tell them all the fags should die and you should all just go to hell. But
I got to tell you, you know, with all the websites you got up and with all the radio shows you're doing, I would hate to see you having to spend your time doing the tedious task of marketing when other listeners could do that for you, you know, because, you know, it's like, you know, I got 10 websites myself, and I spent 7 hours a day creating a video to get your site promoted. And, you know, this is what I'm doing because I believe you got a great message out there, and I believe in it. And so, therefore, I'm doing this work for you. And, you know, I'm not looking for anything in return, obviously, but I would like to see other people out there to be able to go and spam this Craigslist or other websites and forums or whatever, you know, to get this out there, because you put out so much pertinent information through all the radio shows you do that it becomes to a point where it's, okay, we have a truckload of information and nowhere to deliver it. You know, it's like a whole warehouse of Walmart trucks sitting here with information, and they're not going anywhere. You know, what good is that? You know, it's like a supply and demand issue here. We need to create the demand now. And so that's why I encourage listeners, including myself as a student of CI, to go out and promote this message. And I'm hoping that this video, and I'm hoping that other listeners will go out there and spam Craigslist and put a website drop to christogenia.org. And such on there, and you know that's
well. Another thing, my next strategy for marketing is to hit WordPress and Blogger, and what I'm going to do is, you know, I got like 15, 20. I got thousands of email addresses if I want them, and you do too, because all your domains. I got all these email addresses, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to start different accounts on WordPress. I already got one. WilliamFink.wordpress.com, where I got a copy of my blog, right? It just sits there, and it doesn't get any hits, but it comes up high in the search engines. And if you look up miscegenation, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up five or six more WordPress accounts over the next few weeks.
I'm
going to take a couple of my papers from each one of my sites and put them up on a WordPress.
But here's the thing, you already got enough websites, you got enough information out, and we already know that the Jews control YouTube, they control Google, they control the big websites, especially for
search engine optimization. We know they control that, especially with the word Jew, Christian identity and such. So it's going to take footwork. And this is easy footwork, people. I mean, easy footwork where you're at a keyboard and mouse. This isn't what founding fathers or our ancestors had to do. We had to get out there and suffer in hot deserts and freezing cold and to get this message out there. This is easy work for you to do to get this message out there. Go out there and promote this website, you know, ChristianGenity.org, and put it out there on all of – go to sports forums, football forums. I noticed recently on MattHughes.com or .org or whatever, which is the UFC champion, that Jesus was not a Jew. It was one of my websites, .com, was put up there, and there was a lot of discussion. Now, obviously, there's a lot of Jews that came out and threw a lot of
– Cool. Wow, that's great. There ain't no such thing as bad publicity.
No, exactly. No
Jew trick, right?
Exactly. So it's just a matter of us that necessarily aren't really putting out the websites and the radio shows to have an outlet. You know, we're such in small numbers, and we have a lot of Israelite brothers out there and sisters as well that need to be informed. So therefore, we have to keep the message going. And the chemistry of that message is up to you. I mean, some is going to work, some is not. Some people might take heed to the way you present it. Some people might not. Either way, just getting it out there, getting the seeds planted, that was going to be, I mean, we have, like I said, we have truckloads of information sitting in the docks right now. We need to push those trucks out there. We have tons of trucks waiting.
Yeah.
You know, I have missing links out there for 9/11. Great. It's out there. It's got, what, 3 million people that have seen it just on the website alone, probably torrents. That's 3 million people out of, what, 6 billion in the world, 6-plus billion?
Yeah, right. 3 million is a great number, right?
Yeah. It's. I want to hit 6 million more than the supposed Holocaust.
Yeah. Spread around 6 million times.
But, you know, this is and everybody that is – I'll tell you something, a cute story about missing links. Out of the 3 million people I can account for that have seen that video, I've only had 2 official attacks on it. Oh, well, no, 3 now. The ADL attacked it. So if you don't know, the ADL wrote a big hit piece and actually included John. I don't know if you want me to bring that up, John, about your MySpace, but
– Go ahead.
John has got a MySpace page. He doesn't have an official website. But I tell you, John is a man of action. Like I said, he flew down to Florida to meet us on the Missing Links bus tour and rode with us and slept in a bus. And, you know, he puts his money where his mouth is. I'll tell you that. He's a man of action. He might not have big websites to do radio shows, but when it comes to the streets, John is a man of action. And that's what I appreciate. But he was also listed on the ADL's website associated with me under, what was it, Honest John 101? Is that what your MySpace is, John?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, MySpace.com, Honest John 101. And they put him on, they actually recorded quotes from him of his conversations with other people. I guess he didn't realize was Jew was on there and that reporting to the ADL. And then they put my name on there as Mike, the guy who made my missing links and blames Jews for 9/11. Well, the other 2 people out of the 3-plus million that have seen missing links. Chief, shut up. Sorry, I got my German shepherd over here trying to bark at niggers. Anyways, the 2 people that have criticized missing links, here's where your big old eye-opener is with the 9/11 movement, were 9/11 conspiracy theorists. One was, now I explained this in the Frenchman audio file if you guys want to go back, but one was Rick Siegel, who was cousins of Bugsy Siegel, if you all know that, the Jewish Las Vegas.
Great kind.
Yeah, and the other one was a guy that runs 9/11 Blogger, which is a very, very prominent 9/11 conspiracy website. His real name, he goes under the name Reprehensor. Of course, these Jews always go under
these synonymous names on the internet, but his name is Alan Goldman. He wrote this big hit piece on missing links of how I was a Nazi, and oh my God, the Jews are going to come out with hate laws because I'm blaming Jews. He was perpetrating the fear, like I was explaining earlier, that we should invoke our rights and not bow down to these fears. He was trying to perpetrate that fear. These Jews are, oh my God, they're the epitome of psychology to make you fear something you're allowed to do. Don't piss in the toilet.
Well, you know, that's their science.
That's their science, exactly.
Psychology is a Jewish science. Sociology is a Jewish sciences.
And it's BS. It's complete BS. If you actually looked at the rights you still have to this day, that thank goodness, like I said, when we get into these people within the military and intelligence communities in the U.S., that have been behind scenes protecting our rights that aren't even government given. Because, Bill, you called that right the other night with Sword Brethren. They're not government given rights. The government doesn't give or take rights. Yahweh does. Yahweh says you have the right to speak whatever you want. Yahweh says you have the right to protect whatever that is you speak.
And freedom of speech is a huge Christian value.
Exactly.
It, you know, it's mentioned about 6 times in the New Testament. Freedom of speech.
Exactly. So the 2 attacks, other the third one being the ADL, the 2 attacks were from Jewish 9/11 conspiracy theorists. Bingo! This is where I have such a beef. You know what? If you guys ever have a question when it comes to 9/11 or it comes to, you know, basically 9/11. I'm not an expert in anything else. But 9/11 is where the key is at. And so when I see people coming to the CI, exposing or espousing alternative theories that I know to be false and perpetrated by Jews, you have to excuse me for being harsh on these people, whether male or female. You know, getting back to this old subject we had brought up earlier. That's where I come from. And, Yahweh didn't teach tolerance. He didn't teach tolerance at all. And I'm a very intolerant person. Very. I might be wrong sometimes, and I will apologize. I'm going to apologize right now for dropping an F-bomb because I was on a tirade earlier and I shouldn't have dropped that. But at the same time, I'm very intolerant of BS. And people will know that, you know, a lot of people hate me. Oh, Mike, you're this. Mike, you're that. Mike's not going to give you a bunch of BS, though. And that's just what it comes down to. I'll give the floor to somebody else. I'm off my soapbox.
I can accept that, Mike. You don't beat around the bush. Very forward, very honest. And you always seem to try to get to the heart of the matter, digging deep for the truth. And that's one reason why I stuck by Mike for the last 3 years, even though I disagree with him at times. But, I can't see myself not liking Mike in the future. I just, or not associating with him. He's just he's got that thirst for the truth, and he pursues it.
I'll be right back, guys.
John, you can continue beefing up my ego. That's fine. I'll let you go.
Well, it's getting kind of late. I think I should get off. I gotta get back up.
Hey, John. I hope you got some of the questions answered. We talked earlier before this about you asking questions to Fink, Bill Fink, about some of this issue. And
go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
Well, you see, Bill and I would have to have long discussions about this because all of this revolves around historical fact and this is something that I can get into, but our educational system for ancient history in this country or probably everywhere else has been, it's terrible. I mean, they've literally erased our history. If this is anywhere towards the truth, then they've literally erased our history, just like they said they would.
Well, John, take for instance, obviously you know the circles that we've identified with, you know, the people that we've hung out, and grown with and grown out of and such. Take, for instance, Bob Ashen. You know, he basically came from the same background me and you did. And, you know, the guy's no dummy. He's a professor. And he looked at this message and basically saw this to be the truth as well. And it makes a lot of sense. It really does. It makes a lot of sense when you come down to it. You know, there's obviously going to be a lot of arguments against it, you know, but when it comes down to it, that's why I said, you know, come on tonight and ask the hard questions, bring them to them. And, you know, it's like you said, I'm definitely out for the truth and I'm thirsty for it. And if there's BS in it, I'm going to call it. I'm going to call it good. And who knows, maybe a year or two down the line, I might call BS on a lot of things that are said tonight. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, looking into history and looking at what I've read and researched, this makes the most sense and corresponds with the history I've looked at. Aside from good associates that I've had in the past that have disagreed with it. If you know what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I have a problem with all the miracles in the Bible and things like that, but that's for another time. Well, it is in the Jewish character to want to usurp and then deceive, and this has probably been going on for thousands of years. And so from that perspective, I can believe what's being said tonight with a bit of CI. However, it still requires more proof, though.
Well, I will say this. Out of all the stuff, you know, obviously I've studied 9/11. You know, you as well have studied 9/11 very heavily. This subject in itself has been the most extensive and the most draining of studying to find to be true. So it's like, well, you're talking, you know, it was easy to figure out who was behind Bolshevism, who was behind 9/11, the Hall of Hoax, you know, the government subversion, the banking systems and such. It's easy to find it out because it's fairly well documented within recent history. As history gets older and older and older, documentation has been rewritten as much, has been diluted, has been subverted, and so it's hard to see through that. And so I look at that as being a very monumental task to find this to be true.
Right.
Exactly. That's where I'm spending a lot of time in it. And I find it to be true, just, you know, like I was reading out of Henry Ford. You know, Henry Ford obviously did his research. He said the Jews are not of Old Testament people. Okay, well, that leaves the door open. Well, who is? Well, some of these Arab groups, like the guy East Associated with Converse. Oh, well, we're the lost tribes. No, you fucking Arab. Excuse me. You Arabs are not. You got the Hebrew Israelites. Well, if you believe a bunch of niggers are a bunch of creations of civilizations and kings of nations, then that's the way you got to go. You can go Jam Junior with that. But it only leaves another group out there,
just by
the Anglo-Saxons.
Well, what's manifest today, we can see who are the creators of civilization. That's, you know, it's not even a debate on that.
Well, exactly, by the fruits you shall know them. And if you look at the people that have created civilization within recent history that you can exactly account for, you can see who's created civilization. And, anywhere from going to the, space shuttles. I'm not going to say we went to the moon because I don't really believe we went to the moon, and I think a lot of whites subscribe to that because it's sold off as a white accomplishment. But, you know, rocket engines, fighter jets, agriculture, civilization in itself is created by whites. And so you have to, you know, by the fruits you shall know them, that only makes sense that that's been the way it's been throughout history. You know, it was like Fink was saying, you know, back in history, some Negro said that they stole the alphabet from them. Well, you don't just steal knowledge. You basically plagiarize knowledge. So they should have had the same knowledge, and if they were a superior person, they should have been able to create something better than whites who had plagiarized the knowledge. Well, it wasn't like that at all. And it just, it's common sense, you know, it's common sense like that, so.
Well, they invented the elevator, too, didn't you know that, Mike?
Oh, yeah, and peanut butter and potato chips and stoplight.
If the nigger invented the elevator, it was because he was too damn lazy to walk up the stairs. They didn't invent no damned elevator. It takes, they can't invent anything that has more than three parts. They can't do it. They can invent a drum because there's only two parts, a stick and a drum. A stick and a piece of tree trunk. And they'll bang on it. Two parts.
And
that's their limit. That's their intellectual limit.
Yeah, they're basically savages.
Hey, Bill, I had an unfortunate time of watching a recent documentary. It was called Good Hair by Chris Rock.
Wow.
That's good hair?
That's
yeah, cool. Chris Rock, the black comedian, he made a documentary of how blacks have susceptibility to buying all these chemicals to straighten their hair and then blonde it to look like white people. And it never, you have to be tired to watch it, obviously, because, you know, if I watch what the Jews are saying, I can understand with what I know what they're trying to put out there. And the whole thing Chris Rock was putting out there was the fact that blacks have always wanted to be white. That's what it was. That's all it was.
Absolutely.
They put all the chemicals in their hair to straighten out their nappy curls, you know, and, yeah, it was quite entertaining.
They do want to be white. There's no doubt. You look at BET and you see all these platinum blonde yard apes. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Black women with platinum blonde hair, and I'm like, what the hell is that?
You know, Bill and Mike, I've never met a white guy who says he wants to go find a black woman, but I've met enough black guys who say they want a white woman.
Well, let me tell you something. Every nigger in every prison in America right now has a white woman on his mind, wants to de-bounce a white woman, every single one of them.
Yeah.
You a fat, degenerate one.
They would rather have, instead of, I mean, if there were ever such a thing, right? I can't even name a nigger. Instead of the most beautiful black woman in the world, they would rather have a 55-year-old, 300-pound white woman.
Why is that?
I've seen so many not so bad, you know, so many decent-looking niggers, young black men, black bucks, 25, 30 years old, in the prison visiting hall, sitting with 50-year-old fat white women. When, you know, you look at the dude, he could probably get any sister in the hood. Yeah, you know, any halfway decent-looking sister in the hood he could get. But he'd rather have a 55-year-old fat white woman who's had six husbands and they all left her because she was a fat slob and never cleaned the house. And he'd rather have her every time. I've seen it 1,000 times. It's incredible.
And
the white girls say, well, he takes good care of me. And like, even an ape takes care of a banana. You know, apes take care of their trophies. Incredible.
But, yeah, Steve, by there's something about it. Some of these black guys, they have this charm. And I'm sorry, I call it crap talking. You know, I use a different word, but, you know, that's what I call it. They're crap talkers. Now, they deceive them.
Well, you know what it is? It's instinctual. It's instinctual to realize that your race is crap and that you want something of a prize. We'll get into that with this book that we're going to be going through, The Jewish Threat, of how they basically illustrated, you know, back even early in the 20th century, how black men wanted white women because it was a prize. You know, I think, Bill, you read those books, the Studdard and Grant and Woodruff, right?
Well, I read parts of them for the programs with Brian, but I didn't read them in their entirety. I read Madison Grant. I didn't read Stoddard.
Well, they get into that, basically. Well, this book espouses that they get into that, the white woman is basically a prize to the black man because...
Oh, yeah, the white woman is definitely a trophy to the nigger. No doubt about it.
Yeah, I try to explain this to a young lady from Europe that I knew. And, you know, she was kind of hostile to the message at first, only because she knew some black people. And I said, fine, you know some friendly black people, but you don't really know somebody until you live with them. This is, you know, you don't know what they say about behind your back. You don't know what, because, you know, I've known another young lady down south, and she had to work with these black women, and they would talk behind her back, too. They'd call her a skinny white girl. You know, and she ended up dating with a black guy, and I told her, I said, you know what? And the poor girl, you know, her mom, you know, her dad left her, and her mom was working on her fifth marriage. Patricia, you know, don't sell yourself short. You're a really pretty girl. And without that way.
Well, it's an absolute shame because all that nigger sees that white woman as something that he deprived a white man of having white children, and he got the debauched part of the white race. That's how they see it.
Yeah, it's resentment. They resent it.
And I used to ask the niggers, I used to say, you must hate your mama, don't you? What you mean? You hate your mama. You hate your sisters, too, don't you? Well, what you talking about? Well, you don't want to fuck any of them. Yeah, there I go, Mike. And they would just look at me like I was nuts. You would hate your mama. If you were your daddy, you wouldn't be here because you wouldn't have had your mama. You must hate your own mama. And they look at me like I was crazy, and I used to get them all the time with that.
They hated me.
Well, they hated me. That's but you got to tell them the truth. And I used to have sport. That was my sport. That was my wreck in prison.
Well, you know, until whites understand their racial heritage, you know, I mean, they have to get reeducated in this, that they are. In fact, a superior being. And they've got to realize this. Look, without us, what do you think these people would be? Look at Haiti. Is Africa, Haiti, and Jamaica, and all these other places, isn't that enough proof for you?
That's all people need to see. All white people need to do is drive through Philadelphia.
Or Detroit.
And then drive through Burlington, Vermont. Or Augusta, Maine, or Portsmouth, or whatever.
Or where I'll be living up in the UP, Michigan.
Yeah, you know, you drive through all white cities, you don't see any blight. There's no, I mean, there's a couple of trailers everywhere, you know. There's a couple of poor whites everywhere. But you don't see any blight.
You don't see
all these buildings just half busted up with the windows broken down. They ain't been fixed in 50 years and two old crackhead niggers sitting out in front of them with a bottle of Colt 45 in a paper bag. Yeah, you don't see that in white neighborhoods, in white cities. I never saw it. I mean, you see your occasional stew bum, yeah. But, I mean, you drive through Jersey City or Newark, that's all you see. You don't see anything else. For miles and miles, you drive through Bed-Stuy and you can't drive through Bed-Stuy. I'm sorry, I'm stupid.
Why not?
I've seen parts of Bedford-Stuyvesant that I wouldn't drive through, not without a gun, anyway.
Really? What would you think about it today? I mean,
I don't know. I haven't been there in 30 years, and you know, I haven't been there since the '80s. I went to prison in 1996. I haven't been to the city since. I think I was at the South Street Seaport maybe in like 1993 downtown. That's the last time I was probably in New York. No, I went to Rockefeller Plaza once with my wife at Christmas time in maybe 94. That's the last time I was in the city. And I went to prison in 96, and I haven't, you know, I haven't been, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back to Jersey City or New York. That's just crazy.
You know, Bill, if you walk down on a Saturday night from Midtown or, you know, Manhattan or a little south of that on the west side, you don't want to go down there either. I totally understand what you mean. It's like, where are the white people?
Yeah, there ain't none. Well, there weren't any when I was there. I mean, they were rapidly disappearing. I mean, they started disappearing in the 60s. But I remember we used to go when I was a kid. I mean, I was like 16, and we used to go. We used to go get a dime bag of pot and go sit in Greenwich, you know, in Washington Square Park in Greenwich Village, and smoke the whole dime bag of pot and just laugh at all the freaks. That was our entertainment when I was a kid. But I mean, you probably couldn't do that today. But that was my entertainment in 1976, 1977. Just laughing at the freaks in Greenwich Village.
Well, you know, on another topic, though, there's not. I don't want to go too long with this, but one way I've been effective at getting across my racist quote unquote attitude is, you know, being lighthearted about it. And people don't seem to, you know, then when you don't take it personally, you don't get angry, you don't call people names and everything. Or, you know, they seem to be, when you get them on a personal level, you can have that bit of influence. You know that old book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And Carnegie wrote that. And it works.
You know, it works. It does work sometimes. And I've tried that, you know, on occasion. If I meet a really intelligent guy and I could take that attitude, it does work sometimes. I've had mixed results with that too, though, also. Well, and some people are just so programmed that you cannot be a racist and be a normal person. It's ingrained in some people.
Some people call it being overly racist. Can you be overly racist?
Can you be overly racist? No, you can't. I don't believe you can. It's fine. You can be yeah, you're right. You can get mad and emotional about it, and sometimes I do. But I've always tried to more or less read the sort of person that I'm talking to, and there are some people I know I could talk to. I won't even broach the topic with them because I know it's going to go right down the tubes immediately. That they're just like that. And with those people, I try to quip, and I try to make barbed quips like that demonstrate that the people that they, you know, these other people, these other races aren't really what they think they are. And usually they don't, especially the church people. They're the worst people to talk to about that.
Yeah, they're cool.
The mainstream Baptists and the mainstream evangelicals. There's no way they'll ever accept that the other races are different than them. I think that before I have any success with anybody with identity, they have to have a racial awareness. They have to have some kind of episode in their life which woke them up to the fact of a distinction between the races. And if they haven't had and you know, people from the city or from Jersey or whatever or any big urban area, they're much more likely to have had that experience than people from Nebraska and Idaho and Minnesota or even though Minnesota, they're about to get a wake-up call, all these Somalis.
Yeah, Minnesota is going to, well, look at just St. Paul.
Yeah, right. It's being overrun. But I like to use the illustration of what happened to Jersey City when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I was 6 years old. I was 5 years old. My mother used to put me on a bus and send me to kindergarten. You couldn't do that today. You couldn't do it in the 70s. but you could do it in 1965. My mother used to put me on the bus, and I used to go to kindergarten and know I knew when to ring the buzzer, you know, pull the string and get off the bus, and I'd get back on it myself, and usually my old man or my grandmother or somebody would meet me on the other end. And that was up and down Bergen Avenue in Jersey City. There's no way you could have done that in 75 with a five-year-old. I'd have ended up probably getting my throat slit in some synagogue. I'm surprised it didn't happen in 65.
It would be the next Passover matzo meal.
Well, right, exactly. Well, when I was a kid, Jersey City was a beautiful white city. It was almost all white at that time. And I'm talking like 65, 66. And by 75, by the time I went to high school, it was destroyed. It was like 100,000 niggers and spicks moved into it and just destroyed it. And all the whites fled. They all went down the shore. They all went down to Jersey Shore, all the white people.
There's still a small Italian community there.
There weren't, I worked in a Hudson County jail for 12 years, and we would get like one white guy a week would get locked up, maybe, and that was usually for traffic tickets or child support. And every single criminal was a black or a Hispanic. It was incredible. But the I watched that city just fall apart. It was a beautiful city. There were a lot of beautiful Gilded Age, like the late 1800s buildings in that city and houses that all got, every one of them got destroyed. The niggers just destroyed and the Puerto Ricans just destroyed them. Absolutely, all the brownstones downtown. And by the 80s, the yuppies were buying them up and gutting them because they could get them really cheap and gutting them and just redoing the whole thing. So they'd spend $200,000 and they'd end up with a nice building 20 minutes from Manhattan. But, yeah, they just, it was a beautiful city and they destroyed it. And that's my life, you know, that's my childhood experience. And then fighting with the niggers all the time growing up. So I think that, you know, that made me part of what I am today, I'm sure. That contributed to my awareness. Because guys that grow up in Podunk don't get to see that. Don't get, you know, they see the TV nigger. But and the TV nigger is nice and civilized and witty and sharp and intelligent and anything but what they really are. Well, we're really, they're destructive and they're never sharp. Sometimes they try to be cunning, but they're never intelligent. And wherever they go, they export Africa. That they carry Africa around with them. It's in their genes, and they're not blue jeans. It's in their DNA.
Hanging halfway down their rear.
Yeah, right. It's in their DNA. Africa's in their DNA, and they're going to bring it with them wherever they go. Dung huts and destruction. That's all they could do. And the Jew is like Mike was saying before, the Jew was never the creator. The Canaanites didn't build Carthage. The Canaanites didn't build Jerusalem to be the beautiful city it was in the ancient world. The Jews didn't do that. White people did that. We've been the builders everywhere we've gone. And everywhere we've gone, it's the same story. The Jew gets in, and once the Jew gets in, the other races get in, and everything goes to hell.
Yeah, bless you guys. I got it. Hang up.
Okay, Gary. Take care.
Okay.
Yeah, it's getting about that time myself. But...
Yeah, it's getting late. It's 1:52. Another marathon Christigenia Forum call. It's only 4 hours. Right? We've gone five.
Yeah, this lasts a while sometimes, huh?
Yeah, we went over 5 hours tonight. Winstead was here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was a marathon.
Yeah, definitely was. But, yeah, I think I'm going to head out.
Yeah, it's only midnight there.
It's only 2 a.m. there.
Well, we'll call it a night. Well, I probably won't go to bed till 3. I don't know.
Yeah, well, neither will I, but...
I had to run upstairs a few minutes ago. My mother's having hip problems, and I don't know what I could... I can't do nothing for her. I don't know what I could do for her. She going
well, I got that video for you, Bill, and I'll get it up tomorrow sometime early. And then we'll do something better for it later, but at least it'll be something right now that you can use to promote your site on YouTube.
Yeah, right. That'd be great. I appreciate that. That's great. And, yeah. I've actually been thinking about doing a script, but I haven't been able to get to it.
Well, it's not even a script. If you could just pick out, I used an audio from the show I did with you and Ashton. And, it, you know, it was very, because you want to basically draw, you want to use the video to draw newcomers.
Yeah, right. They're not going to, the real meat, they're not going to get yet.
Yeah, so I used a little bit of the audio from the interview I did with you and Ashton originally. Was it about 2 months ago now?
Great, and can't wait to see it.
Yeah, but we can, you know, we can definitely improve and do something better and see what you like about it and see how much it brings in, and then once you do that, you'll see we can improve on it and even get more people involved.
Yeah, I'll throw it up on YouTube and I'll throw it up on my WordPress, and I'm going to start a couple other WordPress accounts under my different emails.
Yeah.
And, I'm going to take just a couple of my articles and throw them up on each one with links, you know?
And yeah, it's unfortunately, video is where it's at because nobody wants to read nowadays. I'm guilty of that.
Well, nobody has the attention span. People don't have the attention span. TV kind of programs that out of you.
Yeah, you know? It really does.
And I noticed that a long time ago with guys, you know, in their 30s, 20s, and 30s. You know, like, we weren't, when I was a kid, we had television, but our parents had one black and white TV with a busted antenna. The antenna was always broke. It always had a coat hanger hanging off the top. And we had it from 3 to 5. And when Dad and Mom came home from work, we had to give up the TV to them and go do our homework, and that was it. So we didn't have the constant television, you know, because we only had one TV in the house. And most families back then did only have one TV in the house. You know, most of the families I knew, west side of Jersey City, most of us only did a – people with two TVs were rich.
Well, I was lucky enough to have lack of TV. Well, we had black and white until I think 84, 85. You know, my mother was, I come from a single parent welfare, recipient mother who to this day is still the same. But, because of that fact, we had, black and white for a long time and we got color, I think, in 85 or 86. And even then it was, you know, when I grew up, it was, we went out hanging out in the fields and, you know, shooting squirt guns and exploring stuff. It wasn't, you know, there was very
few. Yeah, right. We spent most of our time outside, too.
Yeah, exactly.
When I was a kid, in the summertime, especially. But, you know, I'll tell you a true story. My mother, you know, my parents always had this black and white TV, and it was always a portable. And I left the house. I was 18 years old. I got my own apartment. And I came home one day, like about a year later or so, and I see this big color console sitting there, and I'm like, wow, where'd you just get that? And Mom looked at me and said, we don't have to feed you anymore. That was pretty funny. So that was their first color television, and it must have been about 81, maybe, 79 or 80. That was their first color TV. And I don't know, most, you know, when I was a kid growing up, black and white portable was great.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it's good talking with everybody. It's good talking with you, Bill, and John as well. And tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern, I'll be doing a show with Sword Brethren about this book, The Jewish Threat.
Yeah, great. Okay, I'm going to answer Frederick so I don't have to go typing it.
All right, Yahweh bless.
Take care, Mike. Yah bless. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Frederick, in the 60s, with the Immigration Act, Puerto Ricans and Cubans and all kinds of Dominicans and I don't know. They just started flooding in the New York area after that 67, 68 Immigration Act. I think it was 68. Jersey City got overrun with Indians and Pakistanis and all kinds of crap after they signed that Immigration Act. And after the civil rights marches in the 60s, Negroes started moving up north from down south in large, large numbers. And the that they flocked to all the northern cities that had the highest welfare benefits. And that's, I mean, the northern cities were just overrun between the Immigration Act and the Negroes leaving the south. The northern cities were just overrun with aliens. And we probably deserved it for freeing them in a civil war. I mean, we deserved it more than the south did. All right, that's it. Christigenia Fellowship call. Thank you, guys. God bless. This is over with.